ജയം ശ്രീപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാജ് ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീലാ പ്രവിശ വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാജ് ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദ സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദ സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദ സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശീല പ്രഭുപാദ് നമോമി ശ്രീപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദിനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാൽ ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്തിർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവാം ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാദിതരദശ്ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൻ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യത്സൂരയ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മ പ്രോജ്ജിത കൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനി കൃതേ കിം വാ പരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീ തക്ഷണാം നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഗമുഖാദമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാ ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാം യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം അനുഭേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈവായനോ വിരഹകാതരമാജ്ജുഹാവാം പുത്രയുതിതന്മയദയത്തരവോഭിനേതോ സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിമാനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിഥിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ നീയകിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണു കുണിദാതൃദാനനെന്തോ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭത മുരാരേ മധുരീം ന കണികാപി കാപി കാപി നമാവും വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തി വേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിധി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണി ശ്രീമദ് ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജ സ്ത്രീനാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ടശ യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദഗീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശ മനിഷം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണു ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ അവജാനന്തി മാം മൂഢ മാനുഷിം തനും ആശ്രിതം പരം ഭാവം അജാനന്ത മമ ഭൂതം അജാനന്തോ മമഭൂത മഹേശ്വരം. ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ദ വേഴ്സ് യെസ്റ്റർഡേ വി വർ ഡിസ്കസിംഗ് അറ്റ് ദി എൻഡ്. സോ മെനി ഓഫ് ദീസ് വേഴ്സസ് ഇൻ ദി ഭഗവത്ഗീത, കൃഷ്ണ ഹാസ് സ്പോക്കൺ ടു മേക്ക് അസ് അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡ് ദാറ്റ് വിത്ത് അഡ്വാൻസ്മെൻ്റ് ഓൺ റിയലൈസേഷൻ ഓഫ് ദ സെൽഫ് how the personality changes, how individual changes with the self-realization. You have seen before, Krishna mentions there that najamam thani karmani nibadhanandhi dhananjaya udasinavadasinam asaktam teshu karmasu. First thing, Krishna saying that nibadhanandhi dhananjaya, Krishna says that bandhanam means bondage does not happen to a person but through karma for whom self is realized. A person who has realized the self, for him the bondage doesn't happen through karma. Generally everybody gets bound through karma, isn't it? So that bondage through karma does not happen to someone who has realized the self. Najamam thani karmani nibadhanandi dhananjaya. Then what happens to him? Udasina vadasino asaktam teshu karmasu. He is always udasinan. Udasinan means he remains as a witness to everything. He does not get caught up in the karmic cycle or karmic reactions of this world. Whatever karma comes through that body, that is by the superior arrangement, Krishna's arrangement, not coming from the false ego, rather than from directly from Krishna. Having said that, in the next verse Krishna says, therefore maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam, all living entities within them I remain as adhyaksha. In other words, I preside in them, inside them. That is what is Krishna's position here, adhyaksha. He is adhyaksha there. It's the same thing in the Upanishads also, isn't it? Dvasubarna saija sakhayam samana vruksho parishasva jade തയോർ അന്യം പിപ്പല സ്വാദ്വത്തി അനശ്ന അന്യോ അഭിജാകശീതി. ദ ടു ബേർഡ്സ് സിറ്റിംഗ് ഓൺ ദ ട്രീ, വൺ ബേർഡ് ഈസ് നോട്ട് ഡൂയിങ് എനിത്തിങ്, ഓൾവേസ് എ വിറ്റ്നസ് ടു എവരിത്തിങ്. കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് സെയിങ് ദാറ്റ് ഹിയർ ഓൾസോ. ഈ സെയിങ് മയാ തത മയാ അധ്യക്ഷേണ പ്രകൃതി, ദാറ്റ് അധ്യക്ഷ പൊസിഷൻ, കൃഷ്ണസ് അധ്യക്ഷസ് പൊസിഷൻ, ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് ബേർഡ് ഹൂ ഈസ് സിറ്റിംഗ് ഓൺ ദ ട്രീ വിതൗട്ട് ഈറ്റിംഗ് എനി ഫ്രൂട്ട്സ്. ദി അതർ ബേർഡ് completely captivated by the happiness of this world tries to eat the different fruits and enjoy and suffer often, sometimes eating the sweet fruits, sometimes eating the bitter fruits. So that is the second bird, jivatma. The paramatma, Krishna, who is situated in everyone's heart, is always adhyaksha. സോ ഹി സേസ് മയാ അധ്യക്ഷേണ പ്രകൃതി സൂയദേശ ചരാചരം ആൻഡ് ദെൻ ഹേതുനാനേന കൗന്ധേയ ജഗത് വിപരിവർത്തതെ കൃഷ്ണ സേസ് ദേർ ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ് സോ ദേർ ഹി മെൻഷൻസ് ദാറ്റ് ദിസ് പരിവർത്തനം വിപരിവർത്തനം വാട്ട് ഈസ് ഗോയിങ് ഓൺ പരിവർത്തനം മീൻസ് ദിസ് ട്രാൻസ്ഫോർമേഷൻ വാട്ട് ഈസ് എക്സ്പീരിയൻസ്ഡ് ഇൻസൈഡ് എ പേഴ്സൺ The jagat is going on, but the impact of that changes inside will happen because the jivatma is driven by the mind, because of the mind. It is only due to the mind we experience the changes in this creation. If the mind is not there, the changes won't affect us. Sometimes we complain about everything is changing. We say that, isn't it? So Krishna's point is, as long as the mind is active, when you have a mind, which means lot of chittavritti, thought flows going through all the time, this change must have its impact on us. Impact in the sense that you will feel that complete identification with the body and the mind and suffer and enjoy due to that, due to the changes that happens inside. That is what Krishna is saying there. Hetu nanena kaundeya jagat viparivartate. Jagat is going on, but why it affects us so much? Because of the presence of the mind. Liberated souls, because there is no mind in them anymore, mind has gone away from them, therefore all these changes may not have any impact in the person, totally transcendental to everything. After saying that, Krishna says about himself, avajanandi mam mudha manushim tanum ashridam param bhavam ajanando mama bhuta maheshwaram. In the next verse Krishna mentions that, isn't it? So that is what we were discussing yesterday, that who is Krishna? This question is always coming back. Who is Krishna? So understanding Krishna is an important thing to understand Bhagavad Gita and also to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Someone who is instructing the transcendental knowledge to Uddhava and to Arjuna, what is the position of that personality, Krishna? That is what we were talking about yesterday. So we have seen yesterday, Avajanandi Mamuda, Krishna says that so many people who are present in this world when Krishna was here did not recognize him. Why did that happen? Just like the same thing happens to us also now. Even if there are very advanced, realized souls in this world, people do not recognize them. They move away from them, mainly because it's not due to their fault, because of our fault. We haven't developed ourselves properly to notice that personality, spiritual position. This happens. This always happens. So just to show to that, Krishna is saying to us, even when Krishna was present here, people did not recognize him, who Krishna was. What to talk about the others who have come to this world. So here Krishna is going to negotiate with the Duryodhana and the Kauravas before the war happened. The Pandavas decided to send as their representative. Krishna was supposed to go and to speak to them about the war. The war was very imminent at that time. So prior to going to see them in Hastinapur, Krishna goes to all the Pandavas and ask for their opinion, what he should do, how should he negotiate, what would they like to be the outcome of the war, whether to avoid the war or whether should happen, and if so, on what conditions and terms, all these kind of things Krishna was asking the Pandavas. So when he went in, what should I do when I go there? This was the first question he asked Yudhishthira. So Yudhishthira Maharaj says to him that somehow or the other you should go and avoid this war. This was Yudhishthira's instruction to Krishna. Yudhishthira says to Krishna, if you are capable of doing this, if you can go and speak to the Kauravas and avoid this bloodshed, avoid this war, that will be the one thing, and show me the way how you can do that. Because the war was imminent, it was going to happen any time. That stage has come. So it was then that was Yudhishthira's answer. Then Krishna asked Bhima what he has got to say. Bhima says to Krishna that at any cost the war must happen. Imagine that. The elder brother says at any cost you should avoid the war. And Bhima, the next brother, says to him that somehow or the other you should organize this war as quickly as possible. Because he says like this, The Bhima got very upset when his brother said like this to avoid the war. So he says to him, why do I keep this club ready for the fight? Why can't I fight? This was Bhima's question to Krishna. So I have already taken the vow that I will go and fight and kill, and with the blood of Dushasana, I will, Duryodhana's younger brother, with the blood of Dushasana, and only after with the blood I'll wash my hands and tie the hair of Draupadi. Because Draupadi has let loose her hair, which has never been tied since then. So he says, I have taken this vow and therefore I have to do it. This was Bhima's words to Krishna. Then he goes to Arjuna. Krishna goes to Arjuna. Look at Krishna's situation. One person says one thing, exactly opposite thing the other one wants. So he goes to Arjuna and says to him, Arjuna, what do you think about this? Arjuna says to him, I have also taken some vow that I will kill all these people who have got involved with this. And I performed so much austerities and for that, not only that, I pleased Lord Shiva. From him I got this Pashupadastram. And it is only for this purpose. And then I have got this, that Gandivam bow, which I am keeping. Agni has handed over this to me, telling me that it will come useful for the war. That's how when the Gandivam was given to Arjuna, the Agni, the god of fire, fire god, he says to Arjuna, keep this Gandivam with you, it will come useful for the war, which will happen any time. So, therefore, do what you think is proper, but I am ready, he says. Arjuna says, I am ready. And so he says to Krishna, you do what you like, but I am ready for the war. This was Arjuna's opinion. Arjuna was more matured that way compared to Yudhishthira and Bhima. Then Krishna goes to Nakula and asks him what Nakula thinks about it. Nakula also said that, I don't know, you whatever you do, it's okay, like that, in a sort of a indifferent way, Nakula answered. So finally, Krishna goes to Sahadeva and asks Sahadeva about it. In the meanwhile, Draupadi came there. So Krishna asked the Draupadi. Draupadi says to Krishna, showed his hair to Krishna and says to Krishna, have you not seen this hair like this, completely let loose? And first of all, to tie this hair, I need that blood from Dushasana. Draupadi says this. So the war must happen. This is Draupadi's words to Krishna. So, therefore, go there and get this war sorted as quickly as possible so that we can start the war. This was Draupadi's instructions to Krishna. So, we have come so far and now it's not possible to stay anymore in Shanti, or in other words, in a peaceful way. It has gone, that stage is crossed now. We have come to this final stage, the war must happen. This was Draupadi's words. So, after all the Pandavas are finished, Draupadi was over. Finally, Sahadeva was there. So, Krishna asked Sahadeva about his opinion. Sahadeva says to him, what can I say, he said. Krishna asked Sahadeva, what should I say to them when I go there? Sahadeva says to him, what do you think is proper, you do that. So, Sahadeva didn't want to say anything. Says to Krishna, whatever you think is appropriate, you do that, he says to Krishna. Krishna asks him again, don't you have an opinion of your own? He says. So Sahadeva says, tell me your opinion. So Sahadeva says to him, that's what I am saying, he said. Whatever you like, you go and do that. That's my opinion, he said. So why do you ask me this question? Sahadeva says to Krishna. So again Krishna kept on persisting on Sahadeva to give the answer. When he asked that, don't you have an opinion? Sahadeva says to him that my eldest brother Yudhishthira Maharaj, he did not want this war to happen. And in order that this war should not to happen, he should not have gone to play this to involve in gambling. That is how the beginning of the war, isn't it? That Duryodhana invited Yudhishthira Maharaj to play the dice. It's a gamble, isn't it? It's a gambling game. And Yudhishthira Maharaj agreed. But then Duryodhana says to him that I don't know how to play well, my uncle will play on behalf of me. Shakuni will play on behalf of me, says Duryodhana. So when Duryodhana said that, Krishna says to Sahadeva that Duryodhana was very intelligent, wasn't he? That he avoided playing himself. Instead, he brought his expert, who is Shakuni, in all these things, very good at cheating in the game. So he brought him in. Similarly, Yudhishthira, he could have called me to play on his behalf, exactly like the way Duryodhana has done. But instead, Yudhishthira has decided to play himself. And I was waiting there for Yudhishthira to call me to play. And had I been called to play this game, I would have finished everything in one stroke. It would not have lasted. All these things would not have happened. Yudhishthira would have won and all these problems would not have happened. But the fact that Yudhishthira was not very intelligent, he thought that he can manage it, and he didn't want to invite me for the game. And I was really waiting to be called, but he didn't. He didn't call me there. Now, what can be done now? He is telling me that he has created the war himself. Instead of asking me to play the game, he did himself and he lost it. Now he is telling me to go and negotiate peace with them. Negotiate peace with them. So Krishna says, I cannot do very much now. It has come to that stage, he says. Duryodhana was very intelligent, but I couldn't do anything about it and I was not given an opportunity. So, but here, what you can see here, Sahadeva says to him, in order that the war should not happen, you will have to break Bhima's club and Arjuna's Gandivam first. They are both ready for it, fully ready for the war. And then Draupadi has to tie her hair. When all these things happen, when all these things have to happen first, because they have all taken these different vows. Bhima is saying, the club is ready, I am ready. Arjuna is saying, I got the Gandivam and Pashupadam both, and I am ready. And Draupadi says, I won't tie my hair till the Dushyasana's blood is brought here. So, Sahadeva says to Krishna, all these things has to happen first. But more than anything else, one more thing I have to do, he said. I have to tie you down first. You are the person who is behind all these things. Who says this? Sahadeva. Sahadeva says to Krishna that you are the one who is responsible for this whole thing. He said, if you are not involved in this, this wouldn't have happened. This was the way Sahadeva replied to Krishna. When he said that, and you have taken birth, you have come here only for this purpose. Sahadeva says to Krishna, you have taken birth here only for that purpose. As soon as Sahadeva said this, Krishna showed the universal form to Sahadeva. Krishna showed the universal form to Sahadeva. And when Sahadeva saw Krishna in the universal form, he could see that this is time personified. Remember, in the Bhagavatam mentions that, isn't it? Krishna is time personified. When time personified means Kala Purusha. When he comes, that it is time to go. Time to leave this place. So, when he saw that, immediately Sahadeva paid his obeisances and says to Krishna that having known all these things, I did not give you any of my opinion. There is no point. Sahadeva was seeing that the Antaryami, super soul inside, is standing outside in this form. The super soul inside is standing outside in this form. And at that time, Krishna says to Sahadeva, the only person who has given me a proper answer of all of you is you. It's your answer which is the most appropriate one, he said. And congratulated Sahadeva at that point, and you have realized the truth. He says to Sahadeva, what Krishna is saying there, you can see in the light of this verse. Avajanandi maam moodha manushim tanumashridam param bhavam ajanando mama bhuda maheshwaram. Yudhishthira didn't know, Bhima didn't know, Arjuna didn't know, Draupadi didn't know, Nakula didn't know. Sahadeva knew what for Krishna has come. That is what it's saying. That Others have all thought Krishna is one among us. Avajanandi Mahamudha Manushim Dhanim Ashradam. He has taken this form and come here and he is one among us. That's how the others have looked at Krishna. Except Sahadeva. Only Sahadeva sensed that the whole person, he is not, Krishna is not the ordinary person whom you see there. When that universal form was shown to Sahadeva, Sahadeva confirmed to Krishna that, am I not right? Am I not said the right thing? You have come for this purpose only, and who you are, I know, he said. That Andaryami inside, who is present inside, is standing outside. This was Sahadeva's answer to Krishna. Krishna immediately respected that words of Sahadeva and congratulated and told him that you have realized the truth. You have realized the truth. So, spiritual realization is this. Avajanandi mamudha manushim tanyum ashridam. Parambhavam ajanando. Parambhavam. That parambhavam is unknown to everybody. Krishna's parambhavam. Only in rare cases, like Sahadeva realized it, who is Krishna? Who is Krishna? What is that realization? Mama bhuta maheshwaram. That who is situated in all living entities as the supreme controller, as within the heart and controlling everyone's life. That realization Sahadeva spoke to Krishna at that time. You can see that verse. Parambhavam ajanando mama bhuta maheshwaram. That in all living entities, it is Krishna who is present in everyone, situated within the heart and controlling everyone's life all the time, under all circumstances. Knowing this very well, Sahadeva says to Krishna, you are that, standing outside like this now. And I knew that, therefore I have said, I have no opinion. You have come here to sort out the issues. It's you who is controlling everything, not me. And therefore, I have nothing to say. It's your, whatever you think is appropriate, you do it. So you can see from the words of Sahadeva, that this parambhavam ajanando mama bhuta maheshwaram, that realization Sahadeva had. Not others didn't have. Even Yudhishthira Maharaj didn't sense this. He was saying, they were all thinking that according to their desire things should happen. Only Sahadeva said to Krishna, according to your desire, what has to happen, let that happen. Because that is what will happen at the end. Not our desire. We may have make many, many big plans in this world. But what do we see normally? All the time, it is some higher authority. That's what happens. Their decision is what happens here. So, after that, Krishna goes there. And what we can do here, whatever that is happening, is to be a witness to everything. Like Krishna mentioned before, isn't it? Krishna mentions before. Just like a witness to be situated in this world. There is not a lot you can do and change in this world. All those things are just a bhramam or an illusion in our mind. Therefore, Sahadeva's attitude, whatever that is happening, let it happen to remain as a witness to everything. Isn't it? Sakshi. That Sakshi state. So, in the earlier verses, you can see, mentions also that in that verse, Mayadhyakshana Prakriti, that verse, the reference to that is in the Shedashodara Upanishad says, Eko Devaha Sarvabhudeshu Bhudaha Sarvavyabi Sarvabhudandaralma Karmadhyaksha Sarvabhudadivasaha Sakshi Cheta Kevalo Nirgunascha. That is what mentions in the Upanishads about this. And that is that verse, when it came to Bhagavad Gita, it came like this. Mayadhyakshana Prakriti Suya Desa Characharam. It is this verse in the Upanishad, Eko Deva Sarvabhudeshu Guda Sarvavyabi Sarvabhud Andaralma Karmadhyaksha Sarvabhudadivasa Sakshi Cheta Kevalo Nirgunascha. It is the same verse Krishna has put it in his own words in the Bhagavad Gita, Mayadhyakshana Prakriti Suya Desa Characharam. Upanishad word says, Eko Devaha, that super soul who is present in everyone is one. They are not different. Sarvabhudeshu Gudaha, in all living entities, Sarvabhudeshu Gudaha. Gudaha means he is very confidentially, he is present inside, in the guha, in the cave inside. He is present in Sarvabhudeshu Gudaha. And then Sarvavyabi, at the same time, he is present everywhere in the body. In all living entities, in all the bodies, he is present there. What else? Sarvabhudandaralma. The Sarvabhudam Andaralma. He is the soul of everyone. He is the soul of everyone. What else? Karma Adhyaksha. He is the Adhyaksha of all their karma. Just like Krishna says here in this verse also, isn't it? In the Maya Adhyakshana Prakriti, that Adhyaksha, that is presiding everything, all our activities. Karma Adhyaksha, Sarvabhudadivasaham, and inside everyone, inside all living entities, and then Sakshi, he is a witness to everything. Chedaha Kevalo Nurgunaschaha. At the same time, he is never affected by any of the modes of material nature, three modes of material nature. This verse from the Shedashvara Upanishad, Krishna has brought into Bhagavad Gita and put it like this, Mayadhyakshana Prakriti Suyadesa Characharam. Hedunanena Kaundeya Jagad Vivari Vartade. So that verse is coming from there. So after all that, Krishna says, so when we have realization of the self, Krishna is saying that this is what will happen. You will become a witness to everything, completely unaffected by the modes of nature. And this Brahmam or illusion in us, that we have to rectify the world, we have to change the world, and we have to develop the world, all these illusions will go from the head. There is nothing to change here, there is nothing to develop here, the world will go its own way. What Krishna is saying to us is that this Maya's way, that is, to think that something to be corrected here. There is nothing to be corrected here. Actually, our position from the spiritual platform is simply to be a witness. Nothing more to what is going on here. To get pulled into all the illusions here is the greatest mistake. That is what Krishna is saying there. That when Krishna is saying that, he is talking about it from the platform of the soul, who is present in everyone. Andaryami, inside every living entity. Sarvabhudadi Vasa, he is. And that is his role there. And Krishna says, when one is realized the self, he comes to the same situation as Krishna. Same situation as Krishna. All the jnanis also, they were like this. They never thought that they had to change anything here. Because they have moved away from the body, moved away from the mind and the world, this world did not disturb them. We are getting disturbed. Why? Because of the false ego inside. Because of the false ego inside, we get immediately affected by the activities of this world. We think we have to correct this, correct that. There is nothing to correct here. That is the point Krishna is saying. It is a higher understanding. All the great Mahatmas, all the great Jnanis who have realized the truth, they have come to this conclusion long ago. They have already said that. There is nothing to be corrected here. We are thinking that when we take up the responsibility of running the world, then the problem starts. If you leave that to the person who has created, he knows how to run this show also. He doesn't require our advice and our support. He knows how to do it himself. So that is the point Krishna is saying here. He is a Sakshi. All situations, he is a Sakshi. All realized souls remain a Sakshi, as a witness to everything what goes on here. Afterwards, Krishna goes to see Duryodhana to negotiate about the possibility of whether to have a war or not. When he went to see Duryodhana, Duryodhana saw Krishna there, and Duryodhana came to know that Krishna is coming. He said to everyone in the assembly that we have to tie him down somewhere to the pillar. We should tie him down to the pillar. He says to him, first of all, he is a cowboy. He's a cowboy, isn't it? He comes from the he belongs to that group. So he said, what is he? Duryodhana feeling himself a Kshatriya, isn't it? They don't care. The Kshatriyas have got such ego in them that he says to them that we don't accept him. He doesn't belong to any royal family. We know his background, Duryodhana says to others. Whereas we, all aristocratic Kshatriya kings, we are. And he is coming to negotiate with us. We don't need any negotiation with him. That was Duryodhana's attitude. So they said to Duryodhana said to everyone, There is no reception for Krishna when he comes here. He can come and let him say what he has to say, we will listen, and then he can go back. This was Krishna's, Duryodhana's attitude. Shakuni says, Shakuni was clever, always very cunning and clever. So Shakuni says to Duryodhana, that's not the whole thing, he says. If we can get Krishna on our side, it'll solve the problem, he said. A little bit more diplomatic about it. So Shakuni says to him, if Krishna joins our side, then there won't, nobody will be able to do anything with us. This was Shakuni's plan. So, somehow or the other, as usual, Shakuni's mind works. He says, if we can bribe him something to get him on our side, he says to him. And therefore, they decided to invite Krishna for a meal. They thought they can sort out everything through a meal. So they invited Krishna, but Krishna refused. Krishna didn't say. Krishna said to them that I cannot accept any meal from your side because you have become inimical to me. Therefore, I can't invite, accept, and the norm is that you don't accept food from someone who is not have good wishes for you, who is always thinking in an inimical way. Therefore, he refused that, and Krishna didn't agree to go for the meal, and says to him that in this negotiation, I'm not your friend. Krishna says to Duryodhana, I'm not your friend. I'm a representative of the Pandavas. I am coming here. If I take the meal at your house, when I go back, the Pandavas will say to me that you had a meal at Duryodhana's house and therefore now you changed your mind and you wanted to help them, didn't you? Because you can remember when Krishna left the Pandavas, all of them have given different opinion. Yudhishthira didn't want the war, Bhima wanted the war. Arjuna also reasonably wanted the war but didn't insist on that like the way Bhima did. So if I go back and take the meal and they will interpret it in a different way, the Pandavas. They will say that look at our representative, what he has gone and done. He has gone and joined the other side. Practically accepting the meal means that, is it not? So Kshatriya size to go and accept a meal like that from the other side meant that it was a kind of a not a very nice thing, not being loyal to the Pandavas. Pandavas would feel that very much, that Krishna has gone and accepted a meal from Duryodhana. So Krishna says, I can't accept that because I come here on behalf of the Pandavas. Saying this, Krishna avoided accepting that invitation. And then he went to Vidura's house. And the whole night he spent at Vidura's house, discussing various things with Vidura. So, therefore, he says to him, so long as I have come as a representative, and till you listen to me what I am going to say, if you listen to me, then I can accept your meal. But you are not going to listen to me. You want me to listen to you. That's the way it was, isn't it? So, saying this, he went to Vidura's house. So, after that, what happened the next day, he goes to the palace and Dhritarashtra, Bhishma and Drona and many others were present there and Krishna put forward the proposal to them that let us avoid this war, knowing very well that they are not going to agree. Krishna knew that very well. And he says to them that you know the famous, at least you give them the five villages and then one village and five houses, at least one house for them to live. All that different stages of negotiation. And Duryodhana says to Krishna that even to drop the needle, that land I will not give it to them. Duryodhana was so insistent on that. And it was then that Krishna said there is nothing much to negotiate anymore. When all these things happen, Duryodhana so at that time Bhishma was talking to Vidura and others, and Vidura was saying to Bhishma that if you upset Krishna and send him back, we don't know what will happen. We really don't know what will happen because Vidura knew Krishna's mind in the night before. When Krishna stayed at Vidura's house, Krishna has already spoken about what he wants to do. So Vidura was very much conscious that war is going to happen. So he was still trying to avoid saying that, and that is the time when Vidura spoke to Bhishma, because he thought at least Bhishma will understand. And Dhritarashtra was not in a mood to listen. He has spoken enough to Dhritarashtra, he won't listen. So eventually Vidura spoke to Bhishma and told him that we should not upset Krishna and send him back in this way. Because seeing being so persistent, who Duryodhana, Vidura felt that this Duryodhana is going to upset Krishna so much that it will come back to us in a very unfortunate way. That's going to happen. So all these things happened. Duryodhana at that time, when he saw Vidura was talking to Bhishma like this, he got so upset with Vidura. He got so upset with Vidura. And he ordered all the people there to bring the ropes and to tie Krishna to the pillar. At that time, Krishna stood there and smiled at Duryodhana. In the Bhagavatam it says, Hasam unmada karincha maya. When Krishna smiles, it means a lot. Not like our smile. We smile for everything, isn't it? Krishna smiles, there's a lot more to it than that. That maya, hasam. Hasam means the smile of Krishna was the maya. Hasam unmada karincha maya. That how the maya makes us all mad, crazy, isn't it? Like we can see all over the world, all the time fighting going on, something or the other. There is, who does that? Maya does that. And that maya is Krishna's smile. Krishna is smiling in this. So this has happened that when Krishna, when they says to him, Duryodhana says to them that, let us tie him down. Krishna immediately stood there and showed that universal form to Duryodhana. Let Duryodhana see me, who I am, he said. He shows to him. Duryodhana looks at him, and by the looks itself, the question to Duryodhana was, do you think you can tie me down? You can tie me down? And look, I have come with the Narayani Sena, which is Krishna's army. They come with me. Duryodhana started seeing them all there, present there at that time. And do you think that I come alone? He says to Duryodhana. So, in Krishna's body, everything he saw, who Duryodhana saw, not only Krishna, all his army and everyone together. So, Duryodhana opened his mouth and started looking at the whole scenario, like this at Krishna, and says to him, and it only lasted for a few seconds, and then Duryodhana stood like this, and Krishna walked out from there. When Krishna left that place, Duryodhana says to everybody that he is just showing some magic here. Krishna is showing some magic here, some kind of magic. And from there you can see Avajanandima Mutha. Manushim Tanum Ashridam Parambhavam Ajanando Mama Bhuda Maheshwaram. These are the incidents in Krishna's life in this world, where Krishna has proved to us this verse. This verse, Avajanandi Mamutha, this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna has spoken to Arjuna, this was a practical demonstration of that. How not only Duryodhana and many others did not recognize who Krishna was. There were so many Kauravas there. All his brothers were there. Dhritarashtra was there. So many other personalities were there. Nobody recognized who Krishna was. Imagine that. Avajanandi Mamutha Manushim Tanum Ashridam Parambhavam Ajanando Mamabhuda Maheshwaram. But Sahadeva understood who Krishna was. So after that, nobody said anything. Krishna walked back. Krishna walked back to the, more or less it was settled, the war will happen. There was no more negotiations after that. So similarly, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see something similar situations. When Krishna went to Mathura from Vrindavanam, the intention was that Kamsa has given a lot of trouble to Vasudeva and Devaki and they have been imprisoned. Krishna has decided that enough is enough. And that's when he decided to kill Kamsa, isn't it? So that day when everything was organized, Kamsa has sent Akrura to bring them in. And they have come, and prior to going to the a wrestling match was organized between Chanura and Mushtiga and Krishna. So these things were organized already, and the day it was to happen, the day before that, Krishna went to the palace, and before that the Kuvalayapidam elephant was standing there. Krishna killed the Kuvalayapidam and took the two tusks from Kulayapidam, handed over one to Balaram and one he kept to himself. And they both walked into the arena where the wrestling was going to happen. In Kamsa has organized a huge arena, wrestling arena, for them to fight Chanura and Mushtiya. So this was going to happen there. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, when this incident happened, when Krishna was walking into the wrestling arena to fight with Chanura and Mushtiya, there were so many people who were present there to watch this wrestling match between Chanura Mushtiya and Krishna Balaram. So looking at that, everyone who saw Krishna there, they all saw Krishna in different ways. And there is one verse in the Bhagavatam which Vedavyasa Maharshi has taken from Garga Maharshi's Bhagavatam. Garga Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa has taken that and put it into Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is the same verse in both the Bhagavatam. Garga Samhita or Garga Bhagavatam. And that is the same verse what Krishna has put it through the, Vedavyasa has put that through the Srimad Bhagavatam also. It mentions like this: Mallanam Ashanirndranam Snaravarastrinam Smaro Murtiman Gopanam Swajano Sadam Chidibujam Shasta Sopitro Shishum Mrityorbojabade Virada Vidusham Tatvam Param Yoginam Vrishninam Paradevade Dibido Rangam Gadasagrajaham. In the Bhagavadam, when this verse was spoken, Vedavyasa Maharshi Mallanam Ashanirndranam Smaravarastrinam Smaro Murtiman. When Krishna entered the arena, they were saying that who is Krishna? Who is Krishna? This question came up. Kuvalayapidam was killed, the elephant was killed, and they are all looking at the same person. They are all looking at Krishna. Mallanam Ashanirndranam. The Mallas means this Chanura and Mushtiya, they saw Krishna as their death personified, that they are going to be killed by him. That's how they saw Krishna. And Vasudeva and Devaki were there. Nanda Maharaj was also there. And they were thinking, oh, he's only our little child. Vasudeva and Devaki, Nanda Maharaj, they were all thinking about Krishna. He is our little child has come. Chanura and Mushtiya, the wrestlers, they were thinking the death personified has come to kill us. And because the day before that, they killed Kuvalayapidam, the big powerful elephant, isn't it? So that much strength they have in the body. Who knows this? Chanura and Mushtiya knows that. So, and what else? Mallanam Ashanirndranam Naravarastrinam Smaro Murtiman. All the good people who are present there, they saw Krishna as the best among the personalities, a great personality. That's the way they saw Krishna there. Best among the human beings. Naravarastrinam Smaro Murtiman Purushottama. In other words, best among the persons. Strinam Smaro Murtiman. All the women who were present there, they saw Krishna as beauty personified. The beauty of Krishna. They saw the beauty in Krishna. Beauty personified. As though Cupid has come there dressed. That's how they felt the beauty of Krishna. Gopanam Swajanaha. All the cowherd men who had come with Krishna and Nanda Maharaj from Vrindavanam, they were thinking that he is one among us. He is one among us. Gopanam Swajanam. He is one of our people. Our people. That's how the gopas, the cowherd men who had come, they saw Krishna in that way. Then, Asadom Chidibuja Shasta Sopitro Shishum. Then, Kamsa has invited his father-in-law, Jarasandha, and many other powerful kings, they were all present there. And they fell, Shasta Swapitro Shishum. That Bhagavadam Chidibuja Shasta Swapitro Shishum. That Jarasandha and many others who were present there, they thought he is Shasta. Shasta means one who has come to give Shasana. Or in other words, one who has come to discipline us. one who has to come to discipline us, who is going to control us and discipline us properly. And that is how all the kings who were present there, they saw Krishna in that way. So everybody is seeing Krishna in a different way. And then what else happened? Subhitro Shishum. And Kamsa was present, Kamsa was waiting for Krishna to come. Kamsa was watching the arrival of Krishna. And he says to him, and he was, where is this little man, little boy coming from? Kamsa was looking at him in that way. Because Kamsa hasn't seen Krishna for a long period of time, isn't it? Since he left from the jail, there's never another opportunity to meet the nephew. The uncle hasn't met the nephew yet. So this is the first meeting practically. So when he looked at Krishna, very beautiful, the blue color and the peacock feather on the hand and the flute in the hand, everything as usual, and the garland, everything. And they were saying, Mrityurul Bhojapate Virada Vidusham. Mrityur Bhojapate Virada Vidusham. Tattvam Param Yoginam. That Mrityur Bhojapate, Bhojapate is Kamsa. Kamsa felt, is this the one who is going to finish me up? Is the one who is going to kill me? That's how, who thought? Kamsa thought. Mrityur Bhojapate Virada Vidusham Tattvam Param Yogino. Great yogis who are present there, some of them, they thought the absolute truth has come. The absolute truth personified has come here. Tattvam Param Yogino. And that's how they saw Krishna there. Vrishninam Paradeva Devi Vididoram Angrangam Gadasagrajaha. Vrishninam Paradeva Devi Vididoram Gadasagrajaha. All the Vrishnis who have come from Vrishni dynasty, they all thought that Krishna is our Paradevada. That means the deity whom we worship. That is how their relationship with Krishna was. And Rangangada Sagraja, along with his brother Balaram, Krishna walked into the arena, to the wrestling arena. So from in this verse, specifically in the Bhagavadam as well as in the Garga Samhita, how different people who are present in the same arena, how they saw Krishna differently. Everyone felt different when Krishna walked in. They didn't see Krishna as one person. They all saw Krishna in different ways. So all of them, according to their own imagination and their own perception, they defined Krishna in their own way. You see, that is why Vedavyasa is saying this here. Number of people sitting there, but all of them, they gave a definition to Krishna in their own way. Mallanam Ashanirndranam Naravara Srinam Samomuktiman Srinam Smaromurtiman Gopanam Sujanu Asadam Chidibujo Shasta Sopitro Shishum Mrityur Bhojapate Virada Vidusham Tattvam Param Yoginam Vrishninam Paradeva Dedi Vidido Rangam Gadasagrajaham. Why this verse was spoken was to just to make us understand that we all will see Krishna, but we will all understand Krishna in our own way. In our own way. That is what Krishna is saying in these words. So many people were present there while Krishna was in the planet, but nobody understands Krishna's real position, who Krishna is. Therefore, so even the same thing, it is even now it is like that, isn't it? Even today, after so many thousands of years have gone, still people define Krishna in their own way. They define Krishna in their own way. And that is why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, Yaya dhamam prabhadyande tamstadhaiva bhajamyaham. Mama varmanu vartande manushya partha sarvasha. He says to Arjuna, Yaya dhamam prabhadyande, according to their surrender, they will know me, who I am. One who has not surrendered to Krishna, they will not understand Krishna. It is not possible. And that's the same principle here also. That Krishna's reciprocation with anyone is based on the surrender. based on the degree of surrender. One, he understands Krishna, is the one who has surrendered to Krishna. He understands Krishna. Otherwise, he does not understand Krishna. So, avajanandi ma mudha manishim tanyum ashridam. Krishna says, why there are so many versions about Krishna like this? So many people talk about Krishna in so many different ways in this world. And why each one of them talks about Krishna and they experience Krishna in a different ways? That is what is spoken here. So he mentions here, because Krishna says here, they are all seeing my external form. They are all seeing my external form. If we also simply see external form, Krishna's external form, not knowing who he is, and such a person, Krishna says, is a mudha. Avajanandi mam mudha. He is a mudha. He simply sees my form and thinks this is it. There is nothing more to know about Krishna. And such a person, Krishna says, one who is completely thinking that I am this body. Normally that is the problem. If we have a body and we are in this body, we are identifying with this body. So when we see another body, we also think he is that body. That's the same problem. So therefore, because of that, Krishna is saying here, avajanandi ma mudha manushim tanyum ashridam, that they think they are also like me in another body. And they do not know parambhavam ajananto. They don't know my superior nature. And what is my superior nature? Superior nature, Krishna's superior nature is mama bhuda maheshwaram. That is superior nature. What is that? Mama bhuda maheshwaram means in all living entities who is present within their heart and controlling their life. Ishwara means control, isn't it? Controlling their life. Mama bhuda maheshwaram. Mama bhuda maheshwaram. That is why. And that they will not know. They will never take that seriously. Rather, I will take my form outside seriously and start saying that I understand Krishna. Oh, I know who it is. And they'll give me a name or a form and say that that's what I am. So most of the people who are outside, they see this external form and they start giving the definition. This is from the bhakti point of view. From the bhakti side, that is the explanation to this verse. Now look at the jnani's way. Both you have to look at, and you will understand that why both are important. Both are important. This explanation, what we have so far discussed about this verse, is from the bhakti side. From the jnani side, here, wherever Krishna is saying mam, mama, and all that what Krishna has spoken, avajanandi mam mudha, manushim tanyum ashridam, parambhavam ajanando, mama bhuda maheshwaram. This mam, mama, all these words what Krishna has used here, instead of taking the personal form as the explanation to that, you have to take that as Krishna is talking from the platform of the soul, as the Atma of everyone. That is from the Jnanamargam side. They are both are correct. From the bhakti side also correct. From the Jnanamargam is also correct. Krishna is saying there that mam mama is not simply from the platform of the body. It is based on the platform of that Krishna is the soul of everyone. So being situated in that state of realized state of the soul, Krishna is talking so many things in the Bhagavad Gita from that state, isn't it? You know that in the Bhagavad Gita, in many places, Krishna says, surrender unto me, isn't it? Surrender unto me. And also Krishna says here that depend on me in so many places. Machita malgada prana bodhayanda parasparam. So there are many verses in the Bhagavad Gita that you will see Krishna uses this word mam, mama, and mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidaha nirvaira sarvabhudeshu yasamamedi pandava mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevita. Like this, there are so many verses that Krishna says that mam, mama uses there. From the Jnanamargam, all that is refers to the platform of the soul. Based on the understanding, what Krishna speaks and talks about that in the 10th chapter. where Krishna says, Aham Atma Guda Kesha Sarva Bhuda Shayastida Aham Adyanja Madhyanja Bhudana Mandame Vaja. That Krishna says, Aham Atma Guda Kesha, I am the soul of everyone. That is Krishna's first opulence in the 10th chapter. So it is from that state Krishna is speaking, and all these verses also is to be understood from that way, in that way. So if you look at it in that way, if you look at this from that state, what Krishna has spoken there, you can see here that one thing Krishna wants to make it very clear there, the soul is never dependent on the body. The soul is never dependent on the body. But those people who do not know this principle, that soul's independence of the body, this independence of the soul from the body, those who do not know that, they misunderstand everything. Their argument, their logic is that they will ask this question. Sometimes you will see this, people asking these questions. They'll say, oh, if I don't look after the body, how can I do the sadhana? Quite often people will raise this issue, isn't it? How can it, only if you have a body, you can come to know about the soul. This kind of questions, people ask this. So, the answer to that is, no, it is not like that. That, so, for example, the soul is always independent of the body. Soul has nothing to do with the body. But in our ajnanam, in our avidya or ignorance, we consider that the body is us. And we are identifying with that. And because of that strong identification, we bring this logic that without the body, how can I realize the soul? To realize the soul, you don't need a body. That's a wrong understanding. Soul is completely independent. What is required is knowledge, not the body. Having a body doesn't mean anything. Body is not doing it. Body does not belong to us. Body belongs to the nature. Nature is given to us, nature will take it back. And if you analyze that understanding properly, you will notice that body hasn't got much to contribute in developing your spiritual realization. In developing, in realizing the self, body does not have much to contribute. From the Jnana Margam, it's absolutely clear. That's their position. Body is practically, it's a burden. And that body which has come like this due to prarabdham, and we are thinking that if I don't have the body, how will I realize the self? Self has nothing to do with the body. Self has nothing to do with the body. For example, they give this example like this. There was a person by name Rama. Rama was his name. He is acting in a drama. Rama is acting in a drama. And in the drama, his role is Ravana. He is acting like Ravana. And acting very well, Ravana's role. But even though he is dressed like Ravana, he is dressed like Ravana in the drama, he knows very well that he is Rama. His name is Rama. And as soon as the drama is over and he removes all the outfit and all the dress, everything, then if you call him Ravana, he won't like it. In the drama, he has acted like Ravana, because he will tell you, no, my name is Rama, he will say, not Ravana. So to know, come back to his state as Rama didn't take very long. Similarly, we also, due to our misidentification with the body, we are identifying with that body, not knowing who we are. This is our main problem. So similarly, this body also, keeping this body, the problem what we have is, keeping this body, we want to realize the soul. We want to realize the soul. So that is the difficulty. Just like that person who was acting as Ravana, as soon as he threw away, why in the conversation during the drama, they addressed him as Ravana and all that. But as soon as he threw away that dress, he came back to Rama again. Is it not? Similarly, we also, as soon as we throw away this body, we are back into our pure identity as the spirit soul, as our spiritual identity, we come back to that. So Krishna is saying here in the same thing that that we do not know, that we want to know, we want to realize the self keeping this body. That is our greatest problem. Our biggest problem is that we want to realize the truth, keeping this body with us. And it is like this, that the moon goes through two phases, isn't it? That new moon day and the full moon day comes. On the new moon day, it is completely dark. And the full moon day is fully white. Now, you may ask the question that, what has sun got to do with the new moon day? Sun has nothing to do with that. It's the movement of the moon that makes that happen. Similarly, the body and the living force inside has nothing to do with each other. Nothing to do with each other. So, Chaitanyam. Chaitanyam means the living force inside and the body, they have no connection at all between the two. That is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam you will see, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, people give all these kind of logic to show that body is required for self-realization. You may have heard this from many people saying this, oh, if you don't look after the body, how can I engage in my spiritual life? Body has nothing to do with your spiritual life. It's only our misunderstanding. That's all it is. It is this misunderstanding that we have to get rid of first. That body is everything for spiritual life. Body has nothing to do with it. So here you can see in Srimad Bhagavatam, when Jadabharata met Rahugana. You remember that? That meeting between Jadabharata and Rahugana. There was a long conversation between them. What happened there in that meeting between Jadabharata and Rahugana? Rahugana is asking this question. That he says to him, Rahugana says to Jadabharata, if you pinch my body, I feel the pain. If you pinch my body, I feel the pain. And similarly, if you put some fire on my body, it burns my body. I feel the burning sensation. I feel, if you touch fire onto my body, I feel the burning sensation. Similarly, he gives examples there. If you put a pot on top of the fire and pour water into the pot, after a while, the pot gets heated and then the water gets heated. The water gets heated. And when the water is heated, you put the rice into it and the rice gets heated and rice gets cooked, boiled and then gets cooked, isn't it? So Rahugana's question to him was that similarly, everything that happens to the body, will it not affect me? This was the question. Who asked this question? Rahugana asked this question to Jadabharata, to Bharata. To Jadabharata he asked this question. That he gave this example like this, that you put the pot on the fire, pot gets heated, then the water gets heated, and then inside the water, the rice you have put in on, rice gets heated. Similarly, anything that happens to the body, should that not affect the soul inside? Should that not affect the soul inside? Our mind will go like this all the time, isn't it? That's our way of thinking. Because we are very scientist, isn't it? Scientific thinking. Everything very logical. We think like that. That is why, it is at that point, Jadabharata got very upset. Jadabharata really had to tell Rahugana certain things very bluntly. If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see there. Say similarly, that when this happened, that how can you say, Rahugana says to Bharata, how can you say that it does not affect me? So Jadabharata smiled at him, seeing his foolish statement. He says, calls him you stupid, he said. Says to him, you are a stupid. Because akovida kovida vada vadan. The first verse in that chapter you will see there in Jadabharata's story. Tattvava marshena sahamanandi. Tattvava marshena sahamanandi. He says there, vyavaharam egam tattvava marshena sahamanandi. That's how it says. What you consider in vyavaharam, in the normal world, what you think is proper. In vyavaharam, there is one way of doing things. If you bring all that into spiritual life, you won't get very far. That is the answer Bharata has told Rahugana. Bharata has told Rahugana. Akovida kovida. Can I have it? It says there that Tatvavamarshena sahamanandi. The first verse, Jadavardham. Yeah, he says here that Brahmana uvacham. That is the chapter 11th chapter, 5th canto, first verse itself. Akovida kovida vada vadan vadasaya natividam varishtaham nasurayohi vyavaharamenam tatvavamarshena sahamanandi. First verse. Akovida kovida vada vadan vadasyamyo natividam varishtaham nasurayohi vyavaharamenam tatvavamarshena sahamanandi. He says here, calls him, you ignorant man, he says. You very ignorant person. You make speeches like the rejoinders of learned person. Akovida, you are very illiterate, ignorant. But you speak as though you are very learned, he says to, Jadavardha says to Rahugana. Akovida, kovida, vada vadan. He says, the way you are talking about it as though you are very learned. Why? Vadasyado natividam varishtaha. That you don't know anything, still you speak as though you know the whole thing. Nasurayohi vyavaharamenam tatvavamarshena sahamanandi. Nasurayohi vyavaharamenam. That means, whatever we do in vyavaharam, vyavaharam means like the Rahugana answered that. Rahugana's question to Jadavardha was that I cannot accept this, that the problems with the body will not affect the soul. All of us are not convinced about that, isn't it? You will say, probably you may say, or you can say all these things. When it happens to you, you'll see what happens. That's what everybody will say, isn't it? We are all saying the same, thinking the same way on this issue. We can talk so many things, but when it happens to us, what will happen? At that time, you can say, oh, it has nothing to do with me. It's only my body is suffering, I'm not suffering. No, I will be suffering at that time. So, because Rahugana said like this, immediately he says to, Jadavardha says to Rahugana, that's alright, you can say that, but nasurayohi vyavaharamenam tattvavamarshena sahamanandi. In other words, don't bring your logic of the world into spiritual life. This is his point he's making there. Your logic in this world, you can use it for your dealings in this world. But don't bring that logic into spiritual life. He straight away cut him off there. Why? Tatvavamarshena sahamanandi. Those who have realized the truth, they have already said this many times. Not to apply the logic in this world into your spiritual realization. Spiritual experiences. Do not mix these two things together. Which one? Vyavaharam and Tatvajnanam. These two things one should never mix. One should never mix. We give so many examples in spiritual. Everybody gives examples, isn't it, in spiritual life. Why do they give example? To make it a little easier, that's all. But never mix the example with the reality. If you do that, you will not get it. Reality is something different always. So many examples we give, all just like we will say something. Just like this, just like that. All the time you will see, everywhere people, when they want to present the spiritual life and talk about the soul, they have to give you examples. So many examples we give, isn't it? But no example is perfect. That example is only for the world. When we talk about Rajasarpam, about the snake and the rope, when you talk about the mirage in the desert, all these are examples only. And he says to Rahugana, Bharata Maharaj says to Rahugana, if you take that example and start bringing it in, and on that if you start operating, you will not make any progress in spiritual life. They are only there to give you, facilitate a little bit easier to understand the truth. Those things are spoken. So that's why he is saying here, Nasurayohi vyavaharamenam tattvavamarshena sahamanandi. Tattvajnanam, knowledge of the self, and the vyavaharam or the transactions of this world and examples of this world, don't mix them together. If you mix it, you will not understand it properly. You will not get it. That is the problem. That's what he is saying here. Tatvamarshena sahamanandi. Saying that, he says to him that that the tatvajnanam. So, a person who takes this example, from vyavaharam, from transactions in this world, and use it for self-realization, he will never realize the truth. Wants who? Jarabharata. Jarabharata wants this too. He's warning him that it will never work out. So in the first step itself, he cleared him like this. Don't bring your vyaharam into spiritual life. Because as far as Jarabharata is saying here, the soul has never taken any shelter or never dependent on the body. So, whenever someone says to us that if only I look after my body, then I can engage in spiritual life, you have to take it that it is coming from ignorance. It is not truth. It has nothing to do with the truth. This is proper understanding of spiritual life. But then our mind will come in the middle of that and says to us, well, if you don't look after the body, how can you do the spiritual life? One or two people will say like this and everybody follows that then. Then we go for all our different massages and whatever retreats and cruises and wherever we want to do. All because spiritual life, we need all these things. That's what Jadabharata is saying here. You don't need any of these things for your spiritual life. Spiritual life is not dependent on anything to relate with the body. Spiritual life is completely independent of the body. That first thing, Jadabharata removes that ignorance from Rahugana. Rahugana's ego was getting hurt when he was called and spoken like this. Because Rahugana is a very learned person. He has studied well, Shastram, but there is no realization. Whereas Jadabharata is full of realization. So he has no choice except to listen to him. So he is saying to him, spiritual realization is totally independent of the body. What kind of body you have got is immaterial. It has nothing to do with the soul. And you can see that in the case of all the great personalities, if you look, who have realized the truth, you will always find them. They are not anyway attached to the body, connected with the body at any time. So, in fact, in reality, the body is nothing but a temporary experience for the soul is concerned. And the soul is independent at the same time. It's just we feel that it exists, the body exists. In reality, the body has no existence. That is why Krishna says in the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, if you look, you will see the beginning itself is that aham evasam evagre nanyadan salsal param paschad aham yadedacha yovashishyada sosmiham. In other words, in the beginning I was there, in the end also I am there, in the middle also only me exists. The soul only exists in the beginning, middle and the end. Whatever that is coming in the middle and going, it has no existence, it's not sat. It is asat actually. Body is asat. So again that principle is established here that if you are giving importance to the body and thinking body is everything, that is going to cause a problem. You will not reach the realization of the self. It will not happen. It is difficult. That's why first we have to know that we have to nothing to do with this body. So, this, just like in the, they give the example in the mirage, what you see in the desert, when you see the water, if you drink that water, you won't get your thirst quenched. It won't happen like that. Isn't it? Similarly, there is water in the desert. You saw there is water there. I'm going to get that water and drink in the desert. I'm thinking like that. And I'm hoping that my thirst will go away after drinking that water from the mirage. But it will not happen, we know. Similarly, if you think that I'll keep this body with me all the time and I'm going to realize the truth, it is not going to happen. The highest purpose is not possible. It is not possible to... So, all what Krishna has to say to us is, forget about this body. Don't give importance to it. If it comes, it comes. And it is there, it will be there. And it will go when it has to go.
More than that, if you take seriously with this body, your spiritual realization will be hampered. It will not go very far. That's the first thing. So, this thing is called identification with the body. In the Vedantam, they call it as adhyasam. Adhyasam means this, that constantly thinking about the body, of repairing it, fixing it, and keeping it going as long as one can go. As long as this is inside, these thoughts inside, the moving to the platform of the soul is very, very difficult. So that's why Krishna says here that first of all, leave this adhyasam. Adhyasam means this imposition on the identification with the body. So keeping this body alone is, you can see also that with the body itself, there's only more distress than happiness with the body. There's more distress than the happiness. You may say that, oh, it's nice to have a good, healthy body and everything is wonderful like that. But actually, that happiness is not coming from the body. This is the another side of it. If ever we are feeling happy, thinking that the body is in a good shape, that is another ignorance in us. Whenever happiness you are experiencing, that happiness is not coming from the body. You may think that it is coming from the body, because as long as this body remains without disturbing you, suppose you are not getting any disturbed by the body, you are having some happiness. That directly from the self. Directly from the self. That happiness is coming from the self, not from the body. But mistakenly we think it's coming from the body. Mistakenly we think it's coming from the body. So the happiness whenever we experience in life, our illusioned mind and illusion thinking, thinking that it is coming from the body. Actually that happiness is not coming from the body. Only thing what is happening is, when the body is not giving much trouble, you think that happiness is coming from the body. In reality, that happiness is coming from the soul. Happiness coming from the soul. So just like here, suppose you have a terrorist at home. Sometimes it happens, isn't it? some home, there will be terrorists also. You won't know what they are doing. At home they will be all nice. And then after he has gone and done something, then the parents say, oh, we didn't know that he was involved in all these things. They say, gone and put the bomb in the train or in the plane or somewhere and kill 50, 60 people and all them gone away. And then the police comes and start investigation. And the parents are saying, oh, we didn't know anything about it. So similarly, if you have a terrorist at home, what will happen is that for a long time he has not caused you any problem. He looks like everybody else at home. He is coming home and doing things in a normal way. And he was a good person, you think about him. And you are thinking that because he is like that, therefore I am happy. I am thinking at home. The man who is in the house, who is actually a terrorist, but because he is not giving me any trouble, so I think I am okay. He is okay. He is a good person. He is not giving me any trouble, so it's okay. I get along with him. The moment the terrorist puts a bomb and creates something, then you get completely shaken by everything. Is it not? So same thing. After a particular stage, he will start giving you trouble. He will start giving you trouble. And when he starts, you will know that. When the terrorist starts that, you will know that. Similarly, first thing to think that the body is mine is the first ignorance. Primeval ignorance, they call it. Primeval, Mula Avidya. Mula Avidya, that's the word they use for that. And secondly, we think that I am this body. That's a kind of a ignorance coming from that. I am this body. Secondly, the body is mine. And thirdly, the body is for my enjoyment. Body is for my enjoyment. These three things, I am this body, body is mine, body is meant for my enjoyment. It's a very subtle thing. All the three things are very, very subtle. Very, very subtle. And these three things, you can neither accept it nor deny it. It is the problem with these three statements. It is difficult sometimes to accept it because of our identification is so strong with the body. Therefore, we find it very difficult to reject that. And sometimes it's also possible to accept, reject it also, because we know that we are not this body. Is it not? Like, there are many examples to prove this. You have to look at these three statements from all sides, and then you will know it, how accurate the statement is. But till realization happens, you will always be driven by these three statements. So, and the only way you can know this is by process of thinking about it, thought process, which are a self-inquiry, in other words. There is no other way. These three realizations: I'm not this body, body is not mine, body is not meant for my enjoyment. If you have come to these three realizations, three understandings deeply inside, then there's good hope for realizing the truth, what we are. Otherwise it is difficult. This is the first hurdle to cross. I'm not this body, body is not mine, body is not meant for my enjoyment. If you have crossed these three hurdles, then you will be able to move on to the next step in the process of realization. So, by saying all these things, we are not insulting the body. You have to understand that also. You may think that sometimes when people say like this, oh, he doesn't value his body at all. Whereas a lot of people, they give a lot of value to their body, is it not? They how much they want the body to smell nicely. Whenever you go in the bus and train, you see some people, they have completely immersed the body in the channel or whatever that perfumes, all advertisements, and they smell so much that when they come closer somewhere in the train and buses, you will notice this, isn't it? So you can see that people have identification with the body very strongly, and that is very deep rooted in everyone. So, but body is nothing but a phenomenon in the nature. It's a phenomenon in the nature. Just like the tree is standing there, the body is standing here. So, due to ignorance, we are thinking that the body is in me. Body is in me. I am separate from the body as far as the Shastram is concerned. But due to my avidya inside, I am thinking that this body is in me. Body is in me. And also you will notice here that the if you analyze this, my connection with this body, you will know this, that I have nothing to do with this body. You can see many examples like that. That's why Prahlad Maharaj mentioned this to his friends when they came to see him. He says to them, body takes birth. I don't take birth. Body takes birth. Body grows. I don't grow. Body changes. Transformation happens in the body. Boyhood, youthhood, middle age, old age, disease, all kinds of changes that happens in the body. Body becomes, deterioration happens in the body. I don't change, no deterioration happens in me, and body gets destroyed. I don't get destroyed. I don't get destroyed. So, body is having these changes all the time. All the time these changes are happening in the body constantly. And this we have to meditate upon. We have discussed this many times before also in the Bhagavadam. When Prahlada is saying to Prahlada, talk to his friends. What did Prahlada say to them? He says to them that these are the nature of the body. These things are the nature of the soul. Is it not? In the seventh canto he says this. So the nature of the body is these six changes. Takes birth, grows, and it starts changing, then it starts deterioration, decay, and eventually death. All these things, it gets sick, all these things happens in the body. In me, my nature, Prahlada says there, the nature of the soul, Alma, Nityam, it is eternal, it doesn't change. Avyayam, you cannot destroy it at any circumstances, and by nature itself, it's very pure, and it's always pure, and it's always liberated. Why do they repeat all these things about the soul? To get rid of this illusion from our head. That's why it is spoken. Whenever we talk about the soul, you will see Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. That is our Swarupam. That is what we are. In other words, eternal, pure, always liberated, and always fully conscious. That is our nature. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. That's our nature. Now,
when the soul has a definition in one way, body has a definition in a different way. Body has a definition in a different way. So, and you can also see here, that the body you had in your childhood doesn't exist in the youth. The body is gone, isn't it? Another body has come. All the body has changed. And that body what you had in your youth does not exist in the old age. That does not exist in the old age. The whole body has changed. Everything has changed. If you analyze this statement properly, in a proper way, in the eyes of the Shastram, you can see here that body changes. Body changes all the time. Parinamam. Remember yesterday we spoke about that word, parinamam. Parinamam happens to the body. Parinamam happens to the body. Change happens to the body all the time. All the time. But that awareness inside, has it changed any time? When you are 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, when you are 10 years or 15 years, or when you are 30 years or 40 years, or when you are 50 years or 60 years, that I am hasn't changed. That awareness inside me hasn't changed. And that awareness of avabhodham inside does not seem to have any change. I am the same I then, I am the same I am now. I hasn't changed. But when I identify with my body, what do I say? Oh, I am different now, I am completely changed, I say. When I identify with the body, I speak like that. When I identify with myself, when I am the soul, when you are in that state, you won't make that statement at all, that I have changed. You can't make that statement because it's the same I speaking then and it's the same I speaking now. Same speaking now. We give that example all the time, that a granddad had his video on his when he had a baby. They have taken a video on his birthday and kept that video. Granddad kept that video. And the grandchild, and the granddad got so old, he's 80 or 85 years old. So his grandchild comes and the granddad showed this video. Look at me, he says, and shows this video to the grandchild. So the grandchild looks at it, says to the granddad, "This is not you," he says. Look at this photo, this is not you," he says. "This is somebody else, you don't look like this." So granddad says to him, "That it is me, it's me," he says. He keeps repeating, "It's me." So grandchild says, no, when I was your age, it was like this," he says. And shows to him the same thing. So what does it show? It shows that what has changed is the body. Granddad is still saying, "I am, it's me." He is able to say that from inside, that it's me, I haven't changed. It's me. He keeps insisting that, isn't it, to the grandchild. Grandchild says, "You have changed." Grandchild is seeing the body and saying to him that you have changed. Grandfather says, "No, I haven't changed, it's me. But it was at your age I was like this." He identifies with the body and comes back and makes that statement at that time. So here, I have not changed. I am the same person. Similarly, body has changed, mind has changed, intelligence has changed, I have not changed. Body has changed, mind has changed, intelligence has changed, I have not changed. I have not changed. That experience all of us have. It doesn't require much of an explanation. With a little bit of reasoning and logic, all of us can realize that. So that changelessness is in me. So is there an experience of this experience inside what is happening in the body? is in the changes are happening in the body, but changelessness is the nature of the self. Self has never changes. So mind, body has changed, the mind has changed, the intelligence has changed. But only that awareness inside remain without any change. This anybody can accept that, isn't it? The awareness of I am, my existence, awareness, avabhodam, that has never changed. Whether when you are 1 year old, whether you are 80 year old or 90 year old, still awareness of me, I am, that awareness hasn't changed at all. So even if you break up this body and separate the hands, legs and everything, still the awareness remains the same. I wouldn't say that, okay, you may say that I lost my leg, but the I in that hasn't changed. It's still the same. It's still the same awareness. So those who have lost their hands and legs, for them also that awareness remains unchanged. Awareness remains the same. Only the body has changed. From these examples, from these kind of understanding, you can see that the awareness is unaffected by the changes in the body. Is it not? From that you have to know that the awareness has no connection with the body. That is how you conclude that. This is the Shastric way of seeing things. Just like through this example you can see body has changed. From childhood, boyhood, youthhood, old age, all changes has happened in the body. All changes has happened in the body. But when I look to myself, I am seeing my awareness in the boyhood, childhood, youthhood and the old age remains the same. It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. I am then and I am now. I am what I am. So it hasn't changed. So awareness never changes, body always changes. One. Secondly, when you remove the parts of the body, hands or legs or whatever it is, you take it off, still my awareness never reduces. Suppose I have lost half of my body. Does my awareness become half? It doesn't. Does it? I am still full as far as awareness is concerned. From this you can understand, awareness and the body has no link between the two. Only what is in us is that avidya inside, ajnanam inside, is making us to think I am this body. That is the problem. That is the problem. That identification with the body is the problem. It is not, that does not mean that I am this body because I am identifying with the body. So Krishna is saying here, this Brahmam, Brahmam means this illusion what has happened, that you cannot never see that this awareness has nothing to do with the body. That is, this example is spoken for that. Awareness has nothing to do with the body. Body does not belong to me. It belongs to the material nature. Belong to the material nature. And what all going on inside this body, we don't know. We don't know what's all going on inside this body. Material nature decides how this body should change. Material nature decides how this body should run its life in this world. And all the changes that's happening in the body has happened without my consultation. Never took any approval from me or any permission from me. It caps happens on its own way, it's changing. And finally, when everything is over, material nature decides when it should stop working. And at that point, it stops. And then we hand over the body back to the nature again. So why it is, that is to show that, first thing, I'm not this body. And secondly, this realization, body is not mine. These statements, these three things, I'm not this body, body is not mine, body is not meant for my enjoyment. These three statements, through reflection, inquiry and self-analysis, one should come to that very firmly inside before you go into further in the Upanishads or in the Bhagavad Gita. Because that is why in the second chapter itself, Krishna put that verse. Which one? Dehinosmin, yadha dehe, kaumaram, yuvanam jara. If that realization has not come, then remaining chapters in the Bhagavad Gita won't do very much good to us. That is the beginning of spiritual life, this understanding. I'm not this body. Body is not mine. Body is not meant for my enjoyment. There itself, spiritual life begins immediately from there. So that's why Krishna is saying here that you can see that how body is not ours. I'm not this body, that's very clear. How the body, body is not mine. Why? Because everything what is happening in the body is, I don't know what is going on. I've taken the food, how the food gets changed into different ways, and some parts become the mind, some parts become the flesh, some parts becomes the blood. So many ways changes are happening. How come all this is happening?
We don't know. Okay, we know that it is happening, that we know. But how does it happen? That explanation is still not there. Still not there. Similarly, even if somebody takes out my liver or kidney and show it to me, do you know what it is? Suppose I didn't know. I went to the hospital and they have done an operation on me. And they said, one doctor decided that you got two kidneys, we need one for somebody else. Suppose he removed one of my kidneys and I didn't know anything about it. And later on a plate they have put a kidney. I won't know that it is my kidney unless somebody tells me that it's my kidney. Isn't it? It happens all the time. You know that. Somebody says that went to the hospital, they didn't know, without their knowledge, they did the operation. After the operation, they took a few things from inside because they wanted some spare parts somewhere else. So they took it from their body. He didn't know anything about it. After much later, many years later, he got sick. And then he went to the doctor, they looked inside, kidney was missing. Out of the two. Kidney was missing there. And then they realized that one kidney was gone. And they traced it back that such and such an operation happened. The doctor says, yeah, we took out one of that. We needed for somebody else who was dying. We took it, used it for him. All these kind of things are going on in the hospital. You are thinking that everything is very organized there. No, it's not so simple. So many things happen. People take it away, many things. The point what I'm making is that body is not ours. We have this misconception as body is mine. Because if it was mine, I should have known when it was taken out. But I don't know when it was taken out. So many parts inside, you won't know when it's taken out. Just like when you hand over the car in the garage. Many times people complain about that, isn't it? They would have taken some good parts and put something else in there. They have taken the battery, they can put the old battery in. How do you know? You're not going to check every time every battery what they have put it in. Or so many things like that. Parts can be changed and it can be taken out. You won't be aware of that. So similarly, this body is not mine, first thing, and body belongs to the nature. Nature is running the show, it is keeping it going, and as long as it works, it's... And we are mistakenly thinking that it's my body. Body is not mine, that's the first thing. I'm thinking it's my body, but body is not mine. And similarly, we also know, as far as not only the body is concerned, even the brain, if you take, brain functions, but how much control have we got over the brain when it is functioning there? So, just like... We keep saying that it's mine, it's my brain, my mind and all that. That is what they call it as in Vedantam, they call it as Brahman. They call it as a Brahman. So actually it is a product of the nature. Product of the nature. So here is nature's import. It is that nature controls in such a way, just like it has come, nature put it together and finally it will get disintegrated and go back to the nature. That's what we see, isn't it? When finally the body is put in the coffin and taken in, what do we get at the end? A little bit ashes handed over back to you. This is your remnants. Take it to Ganga or Yamuna or wherever you want. And put it in the thames or wherever you like. You can finish. That's what is left. So who has taken everything from us? That is another proof to show that body is not ours. The nature has given us, and nature knows through fire it takes it back, everything. In the heat, it burns and takes it away, isn't it? So similarly, you can also notice that this body is not of much use either, in many ways. It's not of much use. As long as it is there, as long as it's there, it frightens you. Body continuously frightens you. Krishna says this in the Bhagavadam. He says, the only thing that this body does to you is from beginning to end, it keeps you frightened. We live like that, isn't it? Every moment, frightened about the body. Frightened about this body. So, therefore, he says here, this statement that this body is not of much use to us. If you say this to someone, it's a very explosive statement. To tell someone this body is of no use to ourselves. But the truth is, Krishna is saying to us, Yavat sal asudandratam tavat ishwarado bhayam. He says in the Bhagavadam, that as long as you are in the identification with the body, you are
you are under bondage. You are under bondage. You cannot have permanent happiness at that time because the body is there. The very fact that the body is there means that you are under bondage. Yavat sal asudandratvam tavad ishwarado bhayam. And as long as you have a body, you'll be always fearful. That is where we start feeling very fearful about life, fearful about the existence, isn't it? When the identification with the body is strong, you become fearful. You become very fearful. That is, being fearful is not the nature of the soul. Soul is never fearful. Why the soul should be fearful? Soul is full of bliss and knowledge, not fearful. But where this fear has come to us? Because of the body. Because of the body, fear has come to us. It's like an envelope all the time around us, isn't it? When will it get old? That fear, one thing. When it gets old, what happens? When is it going to go? That fear. When you are a child, you don't worry about it so much. But as you get older, you get frightened about this very same body which you are trying to keep going all the time. And it is in that, and then all others contribute to that. The insurance companies, the NHS, the doctors all together come bombarding us with all their different thoughts on how to keep this body safe. And they all know very well that it's not going to stay safe, it's going to go one day. But still, it frightens us in that way. That is what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavatam also. So, it did not come, body did not come asking me. It didn't ask me, can I come and join you? Did the body ask me? No. It just came one day. And you will see in the third canto, when Kapila Vasudeva says to Devahuti Devi, how within the womb, when the body starts coming, how that body, the so-called great body that appears on us, what happens in that time? And it didn't ask us before it came, and even now it's staying with me by not asking me whether shall I stay with you. Body doesn't ask that question. It stays there. And ultimately, on an absolute platform, paramarthika level, shariram, body cannot do anything good. Nothing good the body can do for us. On an absolute platform, body cannot do anything good for us. So, but as long as it's there, you have to eat the food and you have to sleep so that it doesn't disturb you, that's all. Because there is no hope, there is no other way that you can stay out of it. So, because body comes means what happens? As long as the body comes, hunger comes. What is the first thing, isn't it? Hunger. And as soon as hunger comes, you need the food. You need the food. Similarly, you can see here, suppose if the body was not there, will I be working to earn money? Suppose there was no body. You don't have to go to work, do you? These are all the problems what the body has created for us. And we are thinking, oh, it is such a nice body. It's giving me so much happiness. What happiness has it given? Makes you slave here for 40, 50 years to get some money to keep this him going. And who is so ungrateful at the end, without even asking you, he goes one day. So that's this body. So knowing very well, because there is hunger, you have to eat. And because you have to eat, you need the food. And therefore you have to work. So, but sleeping in the same way. Because he is there, you have to sleep. Who wants to sleep 10, 12 hours a day? Because he is there, you have to sleep. The body is there, you have to sleep. So long as the body is there, you have to do these two things mainly. Eating and sleeping is concerned. But that is in that level. On an absolute level, as far as self-realization is concerned, spiritual advancement is concerned, this body is useless. This body is totally useless. So, because if you are thinking that I will get some peace, shanti, satisfaction, fulfillment, all from this body, you are totally mistaken. It's not going to come. That they have to make it very clear. As far as you are concerned, if you think that some happiness or satisfaction or fulfillment or shanti or bliss or whatever you call it, if you think you are going to get any of these things from the body, Shastra says, forget it. It's not going to happen. So, the idea is, only if you move the body away and you wake up inside to the awareness, what you are, only then you will get something from that. Only the awareness can offer you these things, not the body. Only the self inside can offer you shanti, can offer you happiness, and offer you some fulfillment and satisfaction in life. Nothing from the body. Body won't give anything from there. So, by saying all these things, we are not trying to kill the body or to destroy the body. Only thing is, just like we have a car, how much you look after the car, in the same way, you have to deal with the body also. With the body also. One side it is there, on the other side, the attachment for that car should be separated, isn't it? But people now think car is more important than the body, so what can you do? If it has gone to that level, this is our so-called great spiritual intelligence. We have reached that stage, car has become more important than the body itself. Such attachment has developed like that. This is called avidya. Avidya is all these things. What else is avidya? Superimposing on something what we are not. That is called avidya. First of all, we think the body is me. That's the first avidya, mula avidya. On that, other avidyas comes. What are the other avidya? Saying that this body, I am Brahmana, I am Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmajari, Grastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasi, or male or female, I am the king, I am the prime minister, or I am an engineer, I am a doctor, I am this, I am that. Like this, all others' identifications is all ignorance that is imposed on the body. The first ignorance is body itself, is ignorance. On that ignorance, other ignorances have come on top of that, superimposed on that. So, this mamata means attachment has to go. And to think like that I'm going to achieve something with this body. Everybody thinks like that in this world, isn't it? They say, we have got only one life, so you have to make it in this life. There is no bigger ignorant statement than that you got only one life. You got only life, but you got only one body, you may say like this. But this body is not going to help you in any way in attaining anything. Nothing is going to happen. Ultimately, all what will happen is this body will give you a lot of distress. And because one day it is going to go its own way. One day a lot of distress will come, a lot of diseases will come, illness will come. And at that time you will say, oh, my body has become like this. This will be the statement at that time. And we will cry at that time, I can't do anything. I can't do anything about it. So the earlier we understand this, it is better. That this is the reality. Better to come to terms with the reality rather than thinking that I will try to hold on to this body and with this body I'll be happy. So therefore in spiritual life, first thing is that keep the body separate from our spiritual life. Body has no help to us at all under any circumstances. So for some reason it has come, for some reason it's staying, and for some reason it's going to go one day, whatever it is. And I'm not this body. And that that realization, if it has become through self-inquiry and through proper analysis, if you have got established in that, then then as much as the body is getting deteriorated, we will become stronger inside. That is how it is. If you observe people, you will see this. Those who are spiritually advanced people, if you notice this one thing, as much as their body is getting degenerated and getting deterioration happens to them, inside their strength is increasing. The spiritual strength is increasing. Why? These three statements, they have realized it from the very beginning. If you do that, Krishna is saying also that the inner strength of the soul will build up. Whereas if you keep on thinking with the body, I'm practicing my spiritual life, keeping my body in a good shape, I'll do everything. If you think like that, you won't make it. It will not happen. That is the first statement in the Bhagavatam also. That body has to go. The kukha or the first earliest we separate from the body and realize these three things, that I'm not this body, body is not mine, body is not for my enjoyment. If it has come into realization, then you will notice that such people who have that deeper understanding, inside they become stronger. They become stronger. So, one great personality, a Vedantist who had this deeper realization, he went to a hospital for a surgery. After that, somebody went to see him. For an hour or so, they were talking to each other. So, when he went to see him, when they had discussed each other, that person in the hospital, he didn't even talk about the operation, didn't even talk about the disease, even no discussion at all about the illness. So, all what he said was that, as much as this body is withering away, is going away and breaking up, I'm getting more and more confirmed that this body is not me. That was his statement. Just see that. That when you get that understanding, that is why this realization of this, what Krishna is saying in these verses, is so important. That this whole verse, avajanandi ma mudha manushim tanum ashridam. Why did Krishna say this verse? This is our disease. Manushim tanum ashridam. That we are only thinking this body is everything, and based on the body, all our plans, our spiritual life is also, we want to bring the body into it. And use it for spiritual life, we are saying. Krishna is saying to us that I myself is separated from the body. Param bhavam ajanando. I have nothing to do with the body. Krishna is saying this to us. So, param bhavam ajanando mama bhuta maheshwaram. My real identification is not with the body, rather with the self, with the soul. It is from that platform Krishna is speaking. And if we also do not follow the same route, instead we make our own plans. Look, I've got a body, I have to look after the body. Body is very important. If you don't care for the body, what will happen? Then there is no spiritual life after that. It's not going to happen. So first thing is this separation of the body and the soul. Separation of the body and soul. Soul means that's what we are. We have to separate that from us. So this person says here, that after the operation, he never discussed about this illness. Not only that, he says, more and more I'm realizing that, he says there, that my realization of the soul, I'm becoming much more confirmed about it, firm about that. He says like this. And I feel happiness from that realization. Because I have, I knew before from the knowledge, from the Shastram and the books, that I'm not this body. I knew about that. But only when I started realizing more, when the problem started with the body, I started realizing it more. And he says that we are living in a house, and what's the first thing? Suppose a cyclone is coming, or Hurricane Sandy, whatever, is coming. What do you do first thing? You run away, isn't it? That's what you do when you know that it's coming. That's what they did anyway. So, when you know that it is coming, that's the first thing what you do. That you leave that. Everything, you leave all your house, all your property, assets, everything, and you run away from the city to somewhere else. In the similar way, he says here, when you know that the body is going to go one day, when it's going to go and drop off, that at that time, the best thing is to come to terms with it. That you know that the cyclone is coming, or hurricane is coming. And if you develop this knowledge inside that I am not this body or I am nothing to do with this body, then when that cyclone comes, you won't be affected by that. You will be very firmly fixed inside. So that strength will come. So similarly, when the body and the mind, when all these things are in a good shape, you won't know the value of this knowledge of the Shastram. And when all those things on whom we are dependent, just like the body, the mind, intelligence, when they leave us, only then our attention will turn to the soul. And that's only then we will take shelter of spiritual life. Otherwise we won't come to it. We will continue trying to adjust this, adjust that, so many things, and trying to bring body into everything and try to make spiritual life also based on the body. That's what happens most of the time. Even our spiritual life, we are centering it around the body. So Krishna is saying here, till you give up that illusion from the head that body is me, body is mine, body is meant for enjoyment. If these three realizations hasn't happened, progress in spiritual path is very, very difficult. So we'll stop there a few minutes and we'll continue after that. Avajanandi maam mudha manushim tanumashridam param bhavam ajanando mama bhutamaheshwaram. Krishna says here that the this realization of the soul, in order that to happen, first thing Krishna mentions about the disconnection with the body. Disconnection with the body, apart from the body, also with the mind and the intelligence and ego. So, but only this connection with the body, why is it so strong? This is one question always, isn't it? Why is this attachment to the body so strong? The reason is that somehow in our brain or in our mind, it is registered like this, that taking shelter of the body, taking shelter of the body, that is very deeply printed inside, that I have to, if I am taking the shelter of the body. But in other words, being dependent on the body, this has come to us, this thought, and that has become very firmly rooted inside, and that is what is this identification means, bodily identification means. So you can see here from the examples that when things leave us forcefully, when we are forced to leave things, just like in the example of this hurricane in New York, you've seen, then the hurricane came, they gave up everything and they ran. They left the place. They were told to go, isn't it? They were forced to go. They had no choice there. And they didn't know what was going to happen. See, only when a situation like that happens, we will learn. Otherwise, we won't learn our helpless situation with that. So same thing is with this body also. When the body is going to go, then we will wake up. Up to that point, no matter we keep on talking about it again and again and again, still we won't wake up. We'll, as long as you come out and go out, everything changed. Back to normal, everything. Why is it like that? Because it hasn't hit us yet. When it hits you, then you will wake up. When you know that it's going to go, at that time only at that point, you will give up taking shelter of the body. Only at that point you will give up taking shelter of the body. Up to that point it's all just verbal, conversation only. It won't happen. So what is Krishna saying to us? That if spiritual life has to grow, the earlier you leave this connection with the body, how it happens, it will happen. Through vicharam it is possible. Through thoughts it is possible. Because how did this identification happen in the first place? In the same way it happened. Equally, through thought process, it is possible to break that connection also with the body. Otherwise, Jnanamargam has no meaning. Jnanamargam means that how to break the connection with the body. First of all, to think that how this attachment developed in the first instance, how did this identification happen in the first instance, because we kept on thinking about the body and we got identified with the body finally. And accordingly, the karmam started, activities happened, karma vasana happened, and then again further karmam, and due to that several bodies have come, and we identified with all the bodies, and bodily identification has happened to us. So in the reverse process, if you think, that just like the way the identification started and eventually ended up like this with the body, equally through the power of thinking and the power of analysis of the soul, it is possible to go back to that state again. That is the knowledge process of knowledge, or the jnanamargam. So that means when you are taking the shelter of the body, mind, intelligence, everything, that means you are taking the shelter of temporary things. As long as there is shelter of the temporary things in this world, there can never be any happiness under any circumstances. So, on the other hand, when you are taking the shelter of the soul, nityavastu, that is what is called nityavastu. Nityavastu means which is permanent. These are temporary. This is Sat, the other one is all Asat. So long as you are under the shelter of Asat, nothing is possible. But when the shelter comes to the Nitya Vastu, Sat, the soul, that you will know that, you will know when you come under the shelter of the soul, that you will know that you don't need a body really. Really, you don't need a body. You don't need a body really. So, at the moment, what do we think? We think all the temporary things we need, like the body, the mind, intelligence, but we don't need the permanent thing. That's what we think. Suppose somebody tells me that I'm going to take away the soul from inside, you will say, yeah, you can take it off, but don't give me my body, don't take my body away. That's all I will say. Why? Because my shelter is in the body and the mind and the intelligence and the ego and all these things combined together. I am thinking that that's my shelter. But if that shelter moves to the platform of the soul, if I think that I am the soul, that's where the shelter should be. Who said this? Shuga Brahmarshi. Where did he say? In the beginning of Bhagavadam. To whom? To Parikshit. You can see in the Bhagavadam, if you look into the second canto, you will see there the statement very, very powerfully put forward by Shuga Brahmarshi to Parikshit. Parikshit was asking that question. Let me have a look at that. Yeah. In the second canto, you will see there that yes. If we look into the first chapter in the second canto, that's where Shuga Brahmarshi begins that Bhagavadam there in the second chapter. So if you look into the first chapter, the last verse, what did he say? Sa sarvadhi vrityanubhuda sarvam altma yadha swapna jane kshidaiga tam satyam ananda nidhim bhajeda na anyatra sajjed yada alma pataha. That one verse is enough to a direct word with Shuga Brahmarshi to whom? To Parikshit. He is saying, sa sarvadhi sarvadhi vritti anibhuda sarvam alma yadha sarvajane kshideigaha tam satyam anandanidhim bhajeda na anyatra sajjel yada alma pataha. That is what it is. So here he says, sa sarvadhi vrityam anibhuda sarvam. All the sarvadhi vritti means all your thoughts inside, analysis of the mind, vichara buddhi, in other words, through your proper analysis inside, sarvadhi vritti, activities of the intelligence. Dhi means intelligence. Sarvadhi vritti, all intelligence what you have, with all that intelligence, you should engage in this process. What is that process? Alma, in the soul. Tatha swapna jane kshideigaha. That everything else is swapna jane kshideiga. Body is a swapnam. Body is a dream. Mind is a dream. Intelligence is a dream. Through all your thought power, you should absorb in this process of self-inquiry and Alma yadha swapna jane kshideigaha. Then come to this understanding that not to absorb in this swapnam. Swapnam is this swapnam. What is a swapnam? Swapnam is a dream, isn't it? What is the dream? Dream is this. I am this body. That's a dream. And I am this mind. I am this intelligence. I am this ego. This is all nothing but a dream. And tam satyam ananda nidhim bhajeta. Leave all these things and go to Satyam Ananda Nidhim Bhajeda. The soul is the repository, or what? That is where Satyam, that is the truth, that is the Anandam. Bliss and the truth is the soul. That's what he's saying there. Tam Satyam Ananda Nidhi, the treasure house of bliss, Ananda Nidhi. Satyam Ananda Nidhim Bhajeda, worship and take that shelter. If you not, na anyatra sajjel yada atma padaha. If you do not do that, and somewhere else you put all your trust and faith, you are finished. Finished. No more further discussion, he said. It is this a first chapter in the second canto is a very important chapter. Why? Because that is where Srimad Bhagavatam begins. Isn't it? In the first canto, end of first canto, Shuka Brahmarshi arrived in the 19th chapter. The first chapter in the second canto is, you can see if you look, you'll see, Variyash, the first verse itself of the first chapter in the second canto. Variyanyashadam prasnakrito lokahitam nrupa atmavil sammada pumso shodavyadishuya paraham shodavyanindriyajendra nranam sandhi sahasrasha apashyadam atmadattvam griheshu grihamedhinam nidraya hride naktam devayena javavaya divachartahaya rajan kudumbhavaranenavam dehavatrakalatradishu atmasainyeshu asal sobhi tesham pramatto nidhanam Pashyanna bina pashyati. Tasmad bharata sarvalma Bhagavan Ishwaro Hari Shrodavya kirtidavyascha Smartavyascha echadha bhayam Edhavan sangheyogabhyam Sudharma parinishtaya Janmalabhaparapumsa Ande narayana smriti Prayena munayorajan Nivrutta vididheshana Nairgunyastam ramandesma Gunanu kathane hare. All those verses Shuka Brahmarshi begins Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto. That is how he begins. Each and every verse, so many things he has spoken about, talking about the self-realization. That is what he is doing there. He is saying to them, my dear king, you have asked me the right question because it has given me an opportunity to speak to you the truth. He was very happy about that. That Parikshit asked some questions to him. In the last canto, in the first canto, at the end, he asked the questions, isn't it? Parikshit Vacha, you'll see a 5 or 6 verses there. So when Parikshit asked that question, Shuka Brahmarshi felt extremely happy. And he says to him, actually, by you asked this question because it's good for the world. I'm going to answer that question. Saying this, Shuka Brahmarshi started speaking this. And you can see each and every verse he says there. That dehavatra kalatra adishu atma sainyesh asal sobhi tesham pramatta nidhanam pashyanna bina pashyadi. So look at Sukadeva Goswami, is that realization. He says, dehavatra kalatra adishu, those who have got a body and then they got their wife, they got the children, atma sainyeshu asal sobhi, you think that they have got everything in this world, have they not? He's asking this question. And keeping all that thing together, he says here, Tesham Pramatto Nidhanam. He becomes intoxicated with this family affair. Pashyan Abhina Pashyati. He does not see what is waiting there at the doorstep. Talking about the death. He says, this is the nature of all the living beings, he's saying there. And he talked a lot of things about it. That whole chapter you have to read through. And finally, before concluding, ultimately, he put the truth very bluntly to him. Very bluntly he said to him that sa sarva dhivritya anabhuda sarva alma tatha sarva jane kshideigaha and tam satyam ananda nidhim bhajeda na anyatra sajel yada alma padaha. The last verse. He says to him, sa therefore sarva dhivritya anabhuda sarvam. All your vritti, all your thought power, all your brain, intelligence, mind, everything, pull it all together to get this realization. What is that? Atma. Everything is soul. Come to the platform of the soul. Otherwise there is no hope. And yadha sarva jane kshidaigaha. Yadha sotna jane kshidaigaha. Otherwise you are in a dream state. Always in a dream state. Tam satyam ananda nidhim bhajeda. Try to understand the soul and take complete shelter of the soul. Come to the platform of the soul, take shelter of the soul. And what is that soul? Satyam ananda nidhim bhajeda. Soul is the truth. And soul is the storehouse of all bliss, anandam. Satyam ananda nidhim. And take shelter there, he says. Take shelter in the soul. If you don't do that, anyatra, if it goes elsewhere, your shelter, whether it's in the body or the mind or intelligence or ego or whatever it is, Anyatra sajed, if it goes there, yatha, immediately, atmavadaha. Atmavadaha means completely, spiritually finished. There is no hope for the after that. See how important it is, this understanding. That is why you may think that we are keep repeating this, I am not this body, I am not this body, I am not this body. Why do we have to repeat? Because our shelter in the body is too deep. We are taking shelter of the body too much and we are unable to come out of it. The only way to come out of it is to talk against that, the opposite way. And the example is here, Shukha Brahmarshi is saying to Parikshit that sa sarvadhi bhutti anibhuda sarvam alma yatha sotna jane kshideikaha tam satyam anandanidhim bhajeda na anyatra sajjed yada alma vadaha. Says here, so one should devote oneself in this direction, in the self-realization. There is no other thing to be done in this world. This is the truth. And that is what he is saying to Parikshit at that time. So here you can see that from the Bhagavatam begins with this understanding of realizing the self, Atma. Atma is important than everything else. So as long as we are thinking that, as Shukha Brahmarshi says there, that we are thinking that all the temporary things we need, everything, isn't it? So only then we can live here. That's what our present understanding is. Present understanding is that you may ask, say like this, only if I have a body I can live, isn't it? That is the answer. So somehow or the other, that avidya, ajnanam inside us, that because I have a body, therefore I am living. This is the greatest ajnanam, avidya inside. Because I have a body, I am living. Once the body is gone, what will I do? This is my ignorance in me. That is what he is saying there. That body, you don't need a body. That is the first thing. Body is something, it has created this avidya in me that if I don't have a body, what will happen? If I don't have a body, what will happen? So we are thinking that we are existing because there is a body. That's what we are at the moment, isn't it? So on the other hand, because we are there, therefore the body is there. You see that? At the moment, what do everybody thinks? Everybody thinks in this world, because the body is there, therefore I am there. In reality, because I am there, therefore the body is there. It's exactly the opposite. That is called avidya. That is called avidya. This avidya inside telling me that because I am there, because the body is there, therefore I am there. When people ask this question, how are you? What do they say? Yeah, it's going on. Somehow I'm okay. I look at the body. But then the next thing, what do you say? I'm just going to the chemist to collect my prescription. The next thing, isn't it? So similarly, that inside he is telling me that I'm not okay with this body. But externally I have to tell the lie to everybody I'm fine. Only thing is I'm going to collect the prescription to others, isn't it? So same thing, we have this misconception because that's how we have been educated and made to think like this all the time. Because you have a body, you are surviving. If I have not a body, you can't even think about that state, isn't it, without a body. So therefore, when we realize it that body is there because I am there. I am not here because the body is there. I am here, therefore body is there. This is the basic avidya, ajnanam in us. Very deep level, that is in us. All this is there in everybody. It's difficult to get rid of that in one stroke. We will say all these things, as we go out, we'll keep doing the same thing. Exactly what we're spoken about. So, so therefore, because the body is there, it's not because that body is there that we are here. We are here. Body is in me. Body is in me. It's not that I am in the body. Remember this? We talked about it before also. I am not in the body. Body is in me. Body has come out from me. Is it not? You know, from the different activities what we have performed, subtle bodies we have created, different. All these are very fundamentals in spiritual life. When all these things are established inside very well, our spiritual life will become proper.
we will be proper living a spiritual life. We will be living a spiritual life. Otherwise, it will be all simply theoretical. I pick up some verses from the Bhagavad Gita and say, look, preaching purpose, I've got all these verses written down for preaching to others. But nothing has changed inside me. So what is the use from that? So here, the important thing is, Krishna is saying here, that body is in me. Body is in me. And we are not in the body. And why? Because we is the real vastu. What really exists? It's me, not the body. It's me, not the body. And the thing what doesn't exist is the body. What really exists is me. What does not exist is the body. That is why that Upanishad statement in the Kathopanishad, Asadoma Sat Gameya. From Asat come to Sat, says there, isn't it? Asadoma Sat Gameya. From Asat comes to the Sat. Tamasoma Jyotir Gameya. Mrityoma Amrutam Gameya. All these statements in the Upanishad comes from that. Comes from this understanding. That comes from the Asat to Sat. Comes from darkness to light. Comes from death to immortality. Death to immortality. So, what does not exist, from that come to think what really exists. And that body, you cannot evaluate this body. You cannot evaluate this body. Because you can see the nature of the body. You look at this way. As soon as you go into deep sleep state, is there a body there? Where is the body? Where have you gone then? Where have you gone? You saying it's my body, my body, my body. I keep saying this. But as soon as you go into the deep sleep state, what happens? You left the body. You're gone somewhere else. You're not in the body anymore at that time. Body is lying there. But whether you have no identification with the body at that time, in the Sushupti state, isn't it? So, Asoma Sadgamaya. So, in the Sushupti, nobody has a body. Nobody has a body. So, that state, when you don't have a body, when you don't have a mind, that situation happens every night to every one of us. Every one of us it happens, Sushupti. So, that state, and that that state, when you don't have a body, when you don't have a mind, and you can't take your body and mind there even if you want to. In that deep sleep state, in Sushupti state, even if you want to take your body and mind there, you can't do that, can you? You can't do that. So not even you can't take your intelligence there. You can't even take your intelligence there. You can't take any of your thoughts there. The thought power or thought word, thought waves, nothing will go there. So at that time, did you feel anything, you are lacking something? You never felt anything that you were lacking at that point, anything. So our present fear in the vacant state is, if I lose my body, what will happen to me? This is a fear inside every one of us has got. But Sushupti is telling us, you are losing it every night anyway, and why you are not any problem at that time. So why do you have a problem now? That is the question. Why do you have a problem now? So, somehow or the other, if I don't have a body, I'm missing out something. I'm losing something. This is very firmly inside. So, every night, we are going to this state without a body. Freedom from the body is there in every night, isn't it? So, and interesting thing is, if we are not able to go to that state for a few days, what do? We take tablets. Is it not? When today we are saying, I need this body, I need this body, I need this body. Every time we keep repeating this. And every night, by Krishna's arrangement, He takes us out of the body. Krishna takes us out of the body and goes away. And when we come back again to this body, we feel better. We feel better because we went out for a while from here, from the body. So, and we keep saying, but in the way, as soon as we come to the vacant state, you say, oh, without the body, I can't imagine how I will survive and all these things. But every night you are willing to leave it and go away. And interesting thing is, for a few days, if it does not happen, that you could not go into that deep sleep state, what happens then? We go to the doctor. Tell me, I'm not getting sleep. And he says, oh, take all this. gives you a list to go back to that state. So that shows that although we may say outwardly to others that I need this body, the truth is I don't want this body. Because every day Krishna is putting us through that state and proving to us, without this body you will be happy. That is the proof of that. And again, when you are not getting it, that freedom from the body, you go and get the medicines to get back to that state, to get that sushupti state. Isn't it? It's a huge industry, isn't it? This medicine for getting sleep in the night. So many tablets and tranquilizers or whatever they have created. It's a massive business in the world, all over the world. People are buying and sweets, throwing it inside to get some sleep in the night. Big people, politicians, businessmen, big men, and they are so busy in this world, but they can't sleep at night. That's their situation. They can't get sleep at night. Sometimes when you see their life, you feel that there's no time to even to think anything in the process of their absorption in the world. Then they need all these things to get to that state of freedom from the body. So then they take the medicines or injections or whatever to go to that state of freedom from the body. So, because they know very well that only if they go to that state, next day when they come back to the body, they can manage this body. Only if they go back to that state. They know that very well. Inside they know all these things, but still they won't care about it. So daily they want to go to that state, and if you go back to that state and come back in the morning, you get some energy back. Isn't it? You get some energy back to function again the next day. So what does it show? The energy for functioning is also not in the body. This is a misunderstanding. All the energy is coming from the body is a misunderstanding. It's a complete misunderstanding. All the energy is coming from the body. So in fact, all the energy is injected into the body when you don't have the body. The energy that is coming from the body, which we are misunderstanding, is coming back when you leave the body and go. That's when you acquire all the energy. Is it not? When you go into the deep sleep state, when you are not identifying with the body, when you are completely left the body and moved away into the deep sleep state, that is where you tap all your energy, which you bring back next day to spend through the body again. And in the evening when you get tired again, you want to go back and collect more energy for the next day. So that's the thing. Atmana vindade viryam, Upanishad says, all viryam, strength, is coming from the soul, not from the body. All strength is coming from the soul, not from the body. So therefore, because it is like that, body is dependent on the soul and not the soul is dependent on the body. That's the point that is made. Body is dependent on the soul, not that the soul is dependent on the body. This is the proof of that. So body does not take shelter of the soul. Soul does not take shelter of the body. That is why Krishna is saying here, in this verse, avajanandi mam mudha. That mam refers to soul. Manushim tanum ashritam. Param bhavam ajanando mama bhuta maheshwaram. This principle is implied in that verse. Param bhavam is that sushupti state what you are experiencing. And Ma mudha state is when you are in the vacant state. So when we are in the vacant state, we identify with the body, thinking that with the help of the body I am surviving. On the other hand, Krishna is saying parambhavam ajananto. That parambhavam, which is the platform of the soul, when you are in identification with the soul, that's where all your energy is coming from, not from the body. Energy is not coming from the body. But what is the problem is that we have somehow educated like this ourselves, that everything is coming from the body. Body has to be maintained, body has to work, body has to do this, body has to do that. So many things on that false concept
We have lived so long, so it has become very difficult to switch to the other. And that is why we say, if you look after the body, everything will be okay. Everything will not be okay, even if you look after the body. The soul is not taking shelter of the body. Body is taking shelter of the soul. That's the first principle. Body is taking the shelter of the soul. So, only ignorant people, they think like this, that I am dependent on this body. I am dependent on this body. That is why parambhavam ajanantam, Krishna says here. Isn't it? Parambhavam ajanantam means that. So, that means not knowing my real nature. That means if you do not know the nature of the soul, that is what Krishna is saying that. Parambhavam ajanantam means one who does not know the nature of the soul. Like all of us, we are thinking that soul is dependent on this body and we are living in this world in that way, isn't it? That always looking after the body, looking after the body. Krishna is saying to us, parambhavam ajanando, not knowing the greatness of the soul. Because even if your body is extracting the energy from the soul, not the soul is extracting energy from the body. That is that parambhavam. Parambhavam is this, that soul has got the strength, energy, everything. And it is the soul that is supplying the energy to the body to carry on. So, when you do not know that, Krishna is saying, such a person, he calls him as Mutha. Avajanandi mam Mutha, Krishna says. Avajanandi mam Mutha. They think that mam refers to the soul here. In this verse, mam, Krishna, whenever Krishna is saying mam, it refers to the soul. Avajanandi mam Mutha, not knowing me, not knowing the soul's potency, soul's capability, thinking that, it is the body that is looking after the soul. No, soul looks after the body. One who does not know this principle, Krishna says, Mutha. Krishna calls him as Mutha. Those who have realized the truth, they know this. That is the difference between realized soul and the conditioned soul. Conditioned soul is thinking that the body is looking after the soul. Realized soul is thinking the soul is looking after the body. There's a big gap there, isn't it? Big difference. It completely changes our way of thinking when you come to understand this. Soul looks after the body. Body does not look after the soul. So that's where it's coming from. Parambhavam ajanandam. And then Krishna is saying here, what is my real swarupam then? Who am I then? If you keep on talking about the soul, mama bhuda maheshwaram. I am that controller, Andaryami inside, Krishna present in everybody as the supreme controller. That is my pure identity, absolute nature. That is my actual identity, not this body. Not this body. So, all these five material elements, all the five material elements, the controller of that, the witness to all of that, and the awareness, all that is Krishna, Ishvara. That is what Maheshwara means. Ishvara means one who is in charge of, one who is witness of everything, witnessing everything, one who is full of awareness, one full of awareness. That is the nature of that spiritual nature is like that, full of awareness all the time. Awareness. That is the symptom of the soul, awareness. Then all the time witness to everything. Krishna has spoken that before, isn't it? Being a witness of everything and controller of these five material elements. Material elements mean the gross body sometimes is called five material elements. Panchabhudam. That's how they call this body. Body is called Panchabhudam because that's what it is. Five material elements mixed up together in different form, that's all it is. But ingredients are the same, the five material elements, isn't it? So, Krishna says here that one who does not know the soul in that way and one who thinks that he is the body all the time he is thinking he is the body. Everything what we have spoken now about this verse, you have to put that back again and think about it. And you will notice that Krishna is saying certain things which are totally opposite to our realization at the moment or our understanding at the moment. So if you switch into that, Krishna is saying here that one who is thinking every time that he is this body, whoever is thinking, doesn't matter who it is thinking, they are called charvagas. Charvaga means, you heard about this word charvaga. There is one great personality, Charvaka Maharshi. who spoke about it like this. He said that so such a person who is thinking like that, they are called charvaka. So in other words, whoever thinks that I am the body, he is an atheist. Do you understand? Normally what do we say? Oh, I am a devotee. But if I am thinking I am this body and I am a devotee, then I am an atheist. I am not a devotee then. If I am thinking I am this body and I am living in that state and not absorbed in the soul, all the time absorbed in the body, but still I am doing so many activities in spiritual life, considering that I am this body, then you are an atheist. As far as Subramashi is concerned, you are an atheist. He is saying that anyone who thinks who is this body and acting like that is an atheist, because all he knows is his body. He has no identification with the soul. So, in fact, the Charvaka Maharshi's philosophy is such, they are a little bit advanced than us in many ways. Because Charvaka, what does he say? He says, Charvaka's philosophy is like this, that I don't know how long we will live, and that his philosophy is that only when you have the body you can enjoy. Only when you have the body you can enjoy. At the moment, I'm okay, I can enjoy. So he says that hranam krutva gridam pipet yavat jivedayat sukham. That is his principle. That so long as you want to enjoy the body, isn't it? That's the first thing. So borrow the money from anywhere you can get. Barclays or NatWest or wherever you can get, whatever money you can get, borrow it, he says. And buy plenty of ghee. And cook everything in ghee. Don't cook in the sunflower oil and margarine and all that. Everything in ghee and eat well. And you'll have a lot of strength. Enjoy life, Charvaka says. They have found out this happiness in the body so early. So he says here, even if you have to borrow, doesn't matter. But you should eat well. That's the main principle. So, but Charvaka is better than us in many ways. Because if you can see, look at Charvaka's state. Charvaka, you can't blame them for this. Because the point is this. They came to the basic basic necessity of human being is eating, isn't it? Is eating. Even that is also accepted by the rishis. Sages have accepted. Rishis also have accepted that. That principle. Therefore, what Charvaka says is better than what we are doing. Our problem now is that eating is considered to be a proper way of life. It's not considered to be wrong completely. But we are not even able to do that now. That's our present state, isn't it? We are so busy in life and got involved with so many other nonsense things in this world. Manufacturing, exporting, industry, this drilling here, drilling there, flying here, flying there. All kinds of things we got involved. So the Charvakas are saying, what Bhagavad Gita also is pointing out to us, that even Charvakas have a better life than you lot. Our present lifestyle, what is going on now? What is this life today, what we live in this world? If you look around, you will see that just to fill the belly, and that too not even proper food we get. Most of the food is grown in a very bad way with all the chemicals and whatever that has been pumped into it. And that food that we have to consume. And most of the people are so busy that they can't find few minutes to sit and eat food properly. So whose lifestyle is better? Charvaka's life or our life? Charvaka says you borrow money and eat well. So that is a higher life than what we are leading today. That is the basic principle. Because today you may say, what is our lifestyle today? If you look at everyone, whether it were a rich person or a poor man, most of the people are running everywhere. They can't find anywhere any shelter. Except that whatever food that comes on the way, sometimes you see some very big chief executives of big company. I have seen this, what they do. Because they are so busy throughout the day, as soon as 8 o'clock they get into the office, till 7, 8 in the evening they are busy. They have no time even to eat anything. At lunchtime, I see them opening a Walker's crisp packet and eating that, holding the phone in the hand, answering this. You feel sorry for that, because if this is what life has to offer, to just eat a packet of crisp, that you have to give up your proper lunchtime and cannot even a peaceful meal at lunchtime, who is better? Charvaka is better or the chief executive is better? So this is the life. Most of the people have this life today, is it not? So Krishna's point is that Charvakas are also, although they are absorbed in the body, at least they are using that body, but we don't extract any happiness from this body, but simply a struggle from beginning to end. Charvagam, the word charvaga means one who talks very sweetly. The definition, charuvacham iti charvaka. Charuvacham means one who speaks nicely, in a sweet way. He is called charvagam. When Charvaka Maharshi talks about that, eating like this and living nicely, we will also think, yeah, it's not a bad life. Only thing is, you won't know how long it will last. That's the only problem with this Maharshi's words. But Charvaka Maharshi says that while you are living, live nicely, enjoy well. He says like this. Basically, he is correct. But practically, it is not possible. That is the difficulty. Basically, he is correct. That while living, you live nicely, happily. Why create all the distress in life? Live nicely, enjoy, eat well, and live. But practically, it is not possible. You know that. It is not possible. Why? Material nature won't allow you to do that. It will create a situation such a way that you have to work hard. That's a sad thing, isn't it? That's a sad thing. You have to work hard. Even if you know very well while going to work, do I have to work this 10-12 hours a day just to get some food? Particularly, one who has come to spiritual life, his needs are so limited. He doesn't have much to do in this world. Practically, you can see this. In spite of all that, he starts thinking, why I have to do this for 10-12 hours a day? The best part of your life, you have to go and hand over to somebody else's false ego to fulfill, isn't it? And that is very hurting. And it is burning inside. I know it is burning. So many people's heart, it's burning inside. Is this not the life they want? They don't want this life because they know that this body is not the thing that they can trust. They know that this body is going to go. But in spite of all that, why it's not possible? Material nature won't allow you that to happen. It will create a situation in such a way, and once you are in that, you cannot escape from that. If you say to the management that I'm only going to work for 1 or 2 hours a day, he will say, I'll get somebody else. So this is the problem. This is where all the difficulty comes, isn't it? So that's one side. On the other side, unexpectedly, from some corner, some disease will come. From somewhere, something will come. And when it comes, or other distress will come, or some separation will happen in the family. Family members may leave you and go, or death will happen. Various things can happen in the family life. So when you look at all that things, you can see this Charvaka philosophy is not workable. It's not practical. It's not going to work. Philosophically, it looks right, good. But when it comes to practical side of it, it's not possible to follow that. You know, everybody knows these things. It's our daily experience, isn't it? Without any Charvaka, you can know these things. It's easy to understand this. So, you can see here that when you look at people's life, you'll observe these things. Everybody's life, you can see these things are a reality. So, as I mentioned before, a person who went to America. Everybody was told America is the land of honey. And you go, you made it if you get there. You made it like that. And so people go there all the time. They go to America. And then once they go there, and he gets caught up in the life there. So many people got caught up in that situation. You don't know how many. Millions go there for this, making their life. And when they go there, they are thinking that everything is going to be wonderful. But it is not so. It never happens in that way. If you are meant to struggle, whether you are here or you are in America, you will struggle. It's not going to change very much. So, once it so happened, I mentioned this also before, friend of ours, we went to America long ago, and at that time was this big recession started. And it so happened that when we were, so happened to meet all together in the village where we were went to school at that time. So there was someone who never left the village. He stayed in the village whole life. He never went anywhere. He got a small job in the village and he stayed there. He was satisfied with that job and everything. Now he's retired. We are all in the retired age. So this person who has come back from America, he has been there for a very long period of time. So once it so happened, we went to the tank to bathe in the morning. It so happened we all met with together, three or four of us there. And this person who has come from America, he was telling us about the problems due to recession, problems due to unemployment, problems due to terrorists and all kinds of things. He went on and on and on and on talking about it. So this friend who has lived there, who never left the village, he had a small job, he is retired. And when we came out of the temple tank, we were talking about it. And he said, why is he so worried about life like this? That was his comment about that. He says that I had a small job, that job is over now. I get a small pension from that. And all I have to do, he says, I come to the temple every morning and I chant some japam and chanting the holy name, everything he does at the temple. I bathe in the temple tank. I go home, wife is dead and gone, he's alone. Cook some simple meal, I eat and then I sleep, he said. Rest of the time. And he says, this man cannot even sleep, he says to me. He says, he can't even get sleep because he is worried about inflation, worried about unemployment, worried about terrorism, worried about the other problems, what generally we read in the newspaper. He says, I don't have any of those worries, he says. So this is the world, how it is. So Krishna is saying here, that all these problems, why do they come to you? Because we are thinking that remaining inside this body, I have to do some big things in this world. I have to get it done through this body. And I believe in that so strongly, and some thinking in my head, I have to turn the whole place upside down, turn the whole mountain down or whatever that is. And the only reason behind all this is, Shastram is saying to us, it's nothing but ajnanam. Avidya. This is the ajnanam. Ajnanam is all these kind of things, isn't it? Because thinking that I am this body, thinking that I have to get a lot of things done through this body, this is our ignorance. This is our ajnanam or avidya. The earlier we come out of this avidya, the spiritual life becomes easier. Therefore, these things have to be repeated. Although everybody knows these things, but still we have to say these things. Why? Because it's very easy to fall into the other side. Very easy to get caught up in this world. And as long as we are stuck in that side, it will be very difficult to understand Bhagavad Gita also. Krishna is saying to us that avajanandi ma modha. That's why I use that strong word, modha. Manushim tanum ashridam. The moment you accept that you are this body, Krishna is saying here that you have no hope in spiritual life. You have no hope in spiritual life. It's not good enough to say that I am not this body, but you have to know why I am not this body. What the problem body creates? Body creates, what's the problem? Body creates this ajnanam avidya in me. Is it not? I become trapped in the body because of that. Parambhavam ajanando mama bhudam maheshwaram. My real nature, Krishna is saying, parambhavam, that superior nature is mine. After saying this, those people who are like that, who are attached and identified with the body, and who thinking that they are this body and they have a lot of things to get done in this world, what does Krishna think about them? That is the next verse. Mokhasha mokha karmano mokha jnana vicheta saham rakshasema surim chaivam prakritim mohinim shritaha mokhasha mokha karmano മോഹജ്ഞാന വിചേതസാഹ രാക്ഷസീമാസുരീം ചൈവ പ്രകൃതിം മോഹിനീം ശ്രിതാഹ. ലൈക്ക് ലാസ്റ്റ് വേർഡ്സ് കൃഷ്ണ കോൾഡ് അസ് മൂഢ, ആൻഡ് ഇൻ ദിസ് വേർഡ്സ് ഈസ് കോളിംഗ് അസ് രാക്ഷസ. വെരി നൈസ് ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ്? ആൻഡ് വി ലവ് കൃഷ്ണ സോ മച്ച് ഫോർ കോളിംഗ് അസ് ഓൾ ദീസ് തിങ്സ്. ബട്ട് വാട്ട് ടു ഡു? അറ്റ്ലീസ്റ്റ് കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് ടെലിംഗ് അസ് ദ ട്രൂത്ത്. ഇഫ് കൃഷ്ണ ഡിഡ്ന്റ് ടെൽ അസ്, വി ലൈക്ക് ടു ബി ലൈക്ക് രാക്ഷസസ് ഓൺലി. That's what our real identity as far as we are concerned, Rakshasa. But Krishna is saying to us that Rakshasi, and not only Rakshasa, Asura. This is another adjective for us. Rakshasa, Asurim, Chaiva, Prakritim, Mohinim, Shritaha. So let's look at Mokhasha, Mokha Karmanam, Mokha Jnana Vijayatasa, Rakshasim, Asurim, Chaiva, Prakritim, Mohinim, Shritaha. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Culture of knowledge are all defeated, he says. They will never develop any spiritual understanding, those who are trapped in that. It's not possible. Krishna has to say this to us because that's the world today, what we see, isn't it? Then we distribute all Bhagavad Gita, read, we say to everybody. What happens? They read all these things. Sometimes somebody's mind may change. But majority of the people, they don't have time even to read, what to talk about absorbing it. That's how busy they are. So Krishna is saying, Mokhasha Mokha Karmanam Mokha Jnana Vijayadasa Rakshasim Asurim Chaiva Prakritim Mohinim Shridaha. He says like that, isn't it? So let's look at that. Here, you will see here, one who does not know this knowledge, what Krishna has spoken in the last verse. What's that? Avajanandi maam moodha manushin tanyum ashridam parambhavam ajanandu mamabhuda maheshwaram. One who does not know that, in other words, one who does not know the purpose of life, one who does not know the purpose of life, or one who thinks that he is this body, or one who thinks that maintaining this body is the whole business in life, and who takes pride in that, then, or who keeps on increasing that, developing that attachment to this body in that way, they are called mokhaha. Krishna says mokha there, isn't it? Mokhasha mokha karmano mokha jnana vijayadasa rakshasi masurim chaiva prakriti mohinim shrita. So mokhasha. Mokhasha means that. Mokhasha means this, that one who thinks, I'm this body, one who thinks that keeping this body in a good shape, one who thinks that the whole purpose of life is looking after the body, and one who thinks that does not know anything else in life, such people are called Mokhashaha. Mokhasha. That is called Mokhasha. Then, so, they are, not that they are charvakas, they are not charvakas, because that is why we talked about charvakas, because charvakas are different. They are not able to do anything, because they are just caught up in avidya, in ajnanam. Charvakas' philosophy is don't do anything. They are not saying that you should do many things in this world. He says borrow and buy and enjoy. So, he is a little bit cleverer than this lot. This lot is thinking all the time, work hard like an animal day and night, 24 hours to get one packet of crisp. That is this mokhasha. That is the ignorance in them. You will see this, I don't have to say this, most of the people who have worked in offices, you look at their big bosses who are sitting in the glass cage inside and driving the BMW or Mercedes. His lunch will be a packet of crisp. Maximum one apple, you can add to that. If you ask him, he'll say, oh, I'm dieting, I can't afford, I can't eat much. Then what's the point you're working for? So charvaga is better that way. So here you can see, charvaga says here, there's a little difference here. So charvaga, the little difference here is that This person whom we are now talking about, those persons, some people, their understanding is, they will, like they are doing so many other things, they will also say, I have to go to the temple and I have to do my little things what I do at the temple. I will do that also. He will add that also into his life. If you take that away from them, everything remaining is like Charvaka's life. If you take that away from them. Charvagan is the first step. First step. You see, Charvaka's life. So, he says that one who is not giving attention to the knowledge, what Krishna has spoken, not giving any attention to it, not giving any value to all these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, not caring for them, and doing his own things in his own way, and thinking that he is doing spiritual life, he is practicing spiritual life, and also at the very busy in looking after the body and simultaneously trying to keep the body in a happy state, those people, Krishna is going to talk about them. He says, Mokhasya mokha karmano mokha jnana vijayadasa. All his karma is also like his desires. Mokhasya, he has got. Similarly, mokha karmanam. All his activities are also based on this illusion, brahmam. It is on the same brahmam inside. Not able to come to the platform of knowledge. Always staying away from the knowledge what Krishna has spoken. When you study Bhagavad Gita, if the Bhagavad Gita is not making any impact in us and not changing anything in us, if you simply study Bhagavad Gita, what is the use? What good is it at the end? Then what is the use? Simply saying that, oh, Bhagavad Gita is amazing thing. It's Krishna's book. Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita. And once a year you pay offer respects to Bhagavad Gita, forgive. But that is not why Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Bhagavad Gita is knowledge. It is knowledge. Knowledge of the soul. Knowledge of what we are. And if that hasn't happened in this life, then all the effort in studying Bhagavad Gita was a waste of time. Remember in Arjuna's case what happened, isn't it? You know that. When Arjuna heard Bhagavad Gita, after a while Arjuna forgot Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna didn't take it very seriously. Krishna is there, always he was thinking like that. Never took Bhagavad Gita seriously. And Arjuna did get upset about it later, when Krishna left. Same thing happened to Uddhava also. So what happened, based on what happened to Arjuna, Krishna says to Uddhava, don't trust me, he said. Trust my words, what I have spoken to you. Don't depend on me, he said. Don't depend on me. I have given you the highest understanding of what life is about. That is what is Ekadasha Skandam. That's what Krishna is saying to Uddhava. In Arjuna's case, what happened? Arjuna heard all Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna fought the war and everything was over, finished. Finally, Krishna went back to Dwaraka. And in Dwaraka, when Krishna decided to leave the planet, at that time he called Arjuna one day and told Arjuna that you take all the 16,100 wives back to Hastinapur and let them live there. And I am leaving this world. And Krishna left. And Arjuna, on his way back from Dwaraka to Hastinapur, they were attacked by some cowherd boys. Cowherd boys attacked them and Arjuna couldn't do anything. And Arjuna was in a great shock. Such a personality who could fight a whole-scale war with the Kauravas and kill so many people, and who has owned Gandivam and Pashupadam, all the famous ashram in their hand, that Arjuna was completely brought down by the bunch of cowherd boys. Arjuna felt ashamed of that. And he somehow managed to go to Hastinapur, and when Yudhishthira Maharaj saw his face, completely looking very depressed and miserable, Yudhishthira asked him what happened. Arjuna says to him, Vanjitoham Maharaja Harina Bandhurupina. All my strength has gone, he says. All my strength has gone. And Krishna was not there to tell him what to do now. Krishna has gone. And there was nobody to tell him anything. And Yudhishthira Maharaj understood that the time has come to go. Time has come to go. So he went and brought Parikshit and put him on the throne and told him how to run the, how to administer the kingdom, and decided to move to the Himalayas to leave his body. Yudhishthira started, followed by others. Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadeva, all the Pandavas, one behind the other, followed by Draupadi, they are walking towards the Himalayas to leave their body. That is a famous thing in the Bhagavatam called Mahaprasthanam. Mahaprasthanam means when they decided to wind up their pastimes in this world and they are leaving the world. It's a very, very, very touching scene in the Bhagavatam. Also in the Mahabharatam, Pandavas Mahaprasthanam. They have come here and they have done what they had to do and they are leaving the world. The departure from here in a very glorious way. But prior to this, what happened? Yudhishthira Maharaj understood that Krishna has departed the world. There is no point in leaving this world anymore. It's not going to be a good place. Then Kali arrives later, and then Parikshit Maharaj has to chastise the Kali and all that. You can read in the first canto. So Yudhishthira was followed by Bhima, but Arjuna was still having a little doubt in his mind. I am still Arjuna, isn't it? After all, I am Arjuna. That ego inside is not going easily. Although he heard Bhagavad Gita from Krishna in Mahabharata war, still the ego has not left. Yudhishthira didn't take anything with him. Bhima also didn't take anything. But Arjuna wanted to take his bow and arrow with him. You see that? Only Arjuna decided to take the bow and arrow with him. So everybody asked Arjuna, why do you need the bow and arrow? You are going to leave this world. What do you want to take the bow and arrow with you? Arjuna says, on the way, if I need it. Just like we do sometimes, isn't it? In the same way, even when we are taken to Golders Green, even we'll tell whoever is taking us, make sure that everything is okay, all the bills have been paid, and make arrangements, and then we'll go to Golders Green, isn't it? So that same mentality in Arjuna also, little bit of that nature. He is going and he is still saying he'll take Gandiva with me. Maybe if on the way if it comes useful. So same thing happened. So Arjuna is saying there to in the Bhagavatam, Shukha Brahmarshi says there, actually Sudha Goswami says there, that Arjuna was in a very depressed state. He didn't know what to do. Overall confusion inside. When Krishna was there, Krishna made sure that Arjuna didn't fall into that depression like this. But now Krishna has gone, all abilities have gone away. Everything Arjuna finished with that. And now Arjuna is in a disturbed state. Finally, Arjuna thought himself, last time what happened when I had in the same situation? Krishna spoke to me about Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? So, went back to Bhagavad Gita again. There, Sudha Goswami says there, Gidam Bhagavada Jnanam Tattal Sangrama Murdhani. Bhagavadam says, you'll see in the first canto, Gidam Bhagavada Jnanam. This knowledge of the soul, which Krishna has given to Arjuna, that is the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, knowledge of the soul. Knowledge of the soul is the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. Tattal Sangrama Murdhani. What happened to me in the battlefield? When Krishna spoke to me about the soul, I lost all kinds of ignorance. I completely got rid of all my ignorance. I took the bow and arrow and I did what I had to do. I got the inspiration to come back to life in the proper way as Krishna wanted me to do. I got that strength back from the Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, here also you can see Bhagavad Gita is meant for this, to make us aware that what we are, what is our position in this world. So here you can see that one important point. Mokasha Mokha Karmanam. Krishna is talking to us that Mokasham. Mokasha means this false desires inside. False they are. They have no meaning, all these desires. Thinking that I am this body, with this body I have to do so many wonderful things in this world, I have to fix this world, and if I have to achieve something through this body in this world. These are all great illusions in our head, isn't it? And to get rid of that is very, very difficult. To get rid of that illusion from inside. Many people you can see, big men, they are working very hard. And lot of things are crumbling down all around them, but they won't look at it. They'll stay very fixed on their goal, what they want to achieve in this life.
what they want to achieve in this life. Continuously working hard with some goal in their head. I have to become this, I have to become that, I have to become this, I have to become that, one after the another. So this becoming business has become so deeper inside, and with that goal they are living in this world. That is called mokhasha. Mokhasha. And with the result of that is mokha karmanaha. Mokha karmana means engaged in activities to fulfill such desires. That is mokha karma. Mokhasha, and to fulfill that mokha desires, to activities which are to for fulfilling those desires is called mokha karmana. And what else? Mokhasha mokha karmana. Mokha jnana vijetasaha. Mokha jnana vijetasaha. Their jnanam, there is no jnanam in them. There is no knowledge in them. Their knowledge is completely mokham, is completely covered by this illusion. Completely covered by this illusion. Mokha jnana vijayadasaha. When all these things happen, when there is no knowledge inside, when you are engaged in activities which are detrimental to the spiritual advancement, and when you have cultivated a lot of unnecessary desires inside, what will happen? Rakshasim asurim chaiva. They will become rakshasas and asuras. And why? Prakriti mohinim shridaha. Because they are completely under the control or the grip of the three modes of material nature. Prakriti mohinim shridha. That's what it means. Prakriti mohinim shridha will happen. And once that has happened, Krishna says, it's very difficult to escape from that state. It comes to such a state, then it requires a lot of distress to be given to them before they can come out of that illusion. Otherwise they won't come out. So you can see the problem. Krishna mentions this, that you know, when he said four kinds of devotees, isn't it? Artho, Jijnyasu, Artharthi, Jnani. These category whom we have discussed now, till they get Arthi. Arthi means misery. In distress in life, they will not change. They will not open their eyes. They will not see the reality. When they are completely excited by the mokhasha, mokha karmanam, mokha jnana vichedasa, and once they have become like rakshasa and asuras, and they are completely fallen into the grip of the modes of material nature, prakriti mohinim shada, Krishna is saying that they can only be fixed if they are given some heavy distress. Only through that, that's only remedy for them. Preaching to them won't help. They're not going to change. Preaching won't help. They need to be punished heavily by forces of the nature. And Krishna has to act in that way. And then they will open their eyes and start seeing things in a little different way. So you can see the problem that when you come to spiritual life, everyone doesn't come with an open mind. Many of us have a lot of conditioning from our material life also. And sometimes we are halfway this way, halfway that way, swinging this side and that side. But totally Krishna says, if spiritual realization has to come at some point, complete attachment and care for the body, for the mind, all these things has to leave us. Otherwise it's not possible. So we'll stop there today and we'll continue on the, I think it's the 1st of December, isn't it? Saturday. I think so. Yeah, 1st of December? 2 weeks time. Yeah, in 2 weeks. So next 2 weekends we don't have classes. Third weekend we'll start again. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.